We have 58 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 60. Stay tuned now. It's time for the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next with your host, Liz Brown. She'll be on deck right after this. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Coming up on October 17th, it's a special two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. We should call it Mondays at 8. Our special guest is Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank is a professor of psychiatry at George Washington Medical School. His publication takes a look at the actions of President Bush over the last several years. Dr. Frank says the inconsistencies and denials he exhibits are troubling. His tendency to avoid taking responsibility is a pattern that has gone on long before he became president, and this leads to concerns about the safety of all people whose lives he touches. This interview will be full of revelations that will seem outrageous, but when you put all the pieces together, the picture becomes clear. In addition, we'll have several copies of the book to give away to the listening audience during the interview. So don't miss this special edition of Mondays at 9, starting at 8, on Monday, October 17th, with Dr. Justin Frank and Bush on the Couch, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
This is the sound of an AK-47 being fired at you. This is the sound of a rocket-propelled grenade headed your way. This is the sound of a bullet ricocheting off your helmet. This is the sound of an anti-personnel landmine exploding underneath you. This is the sound of a car bomb exploding less than a block away. And this?
These people don't lie. George W. Bush would be
talking about. That's the sound of people who have never heard these sounds arguing about something they know absolutely nothing about. Maybe we should start listening to the people who were there. Go to optruth.org to find out how you can really help support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Cut your gas costs in half. Team up to share the ride to work in a carpool or vanpool. Thousands of St. Louis area commuters have discovered how ride sharing with Ride Finders can combat the sting of rising gas prices, and you can too. Ride Finders offers an exclusive computerized ride matching service that matches commuters throughout the region who share similar workday commutes so they can contact one another to share the ride in a carpool or vanpool. The ride matching service is provided by Ride Finders free of charge and is available online at ridefinders.org or toll-free at 800-VIP-RIDE. The higher gas prices get, the more savings you'll see. Add more passengers to your carpool and save even more. Call Ride Finders today at 800-VIP-RIDE and ease the strain that record gas prices are putting on your wallet. That's 800-VIP-RIDE.
Tuesday morning on the wake-up call, a look at the infamous Chain of Rocks Bridge murders. Marlon Gray was convicted of killing two sisters after robbing and raping them before they were thrown off the Chain of Rocks Bridge in 1991. But the state never proved he was on the bridge or that he was even there when the murders took place. Still, he was portrayed as the ringleader. The only witnesses who connected Gray to any crime were one of the four robbers who got a deal with the state and Thomas Cummins, a cousin of the sisters, who was the original suspect in the case. The prosecuting attorney who handled the case had eight previous cases reversed due to misconduct. Cummins sued the St. Louis police, saying he was beaten into making a statement. He settled his suit for $150,000. Marlon Gray said the police also beat him and made him confess to raping the girls but not killing them. He filed a complaint but was not believed. Now Marlon Gray is facing execution October 26th. We'll talk to Marlon Gray live from Death Row on Tuesday morning, along with in-studio guests who bring you information you've never heard before. It all happens Tuesday morning here on The Wake Up Call. Time now for another edition of The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I discuss? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I discuss? Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemy, the man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
All men are created equal, yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the wake-up call. My goodness gracious, it's going to be an amazing week. Today, Bush on the couch, 2 hours. Tomorrow, live from death row, Marlon Gray. We're going to be talking about the Chain of Rocks. Murders. And how and why the death penalty is such a scary, awful, awful thing. It's going to be an amazing week. You need to fasten your seatbelts because we're going to be doing some stuff here. We're going to be doing some stuff here. Where do we begin this morning? Where do we begin? Well, let me see. It's hard to figure out. It's hard to figure out. Let me get this straight. Judith Miller went to jail for many, many days, 80-something days, because she wanted to protect her source on the Karl Rove, Valerie Plame, Scooter, I love saying that, Scooter Libby case. She went to jail to protect her sources, and now it turns out, she doesn't remember. I don't remember who told me the name of Valerie Plame. My notes are sparse. Huh? What you mean you don't remember who told you? Ain't that some stuff? Ain't that some stuff? Carl Rove testified for 4 hours. 4 hours at the grand jury, and information, indictment, decisions are, some legal experts are saying out there, legal experts close to the case are saying out there, folks that know some stuff about what's going on, that they expect some stuff to come down this week. I guess it's not just going to be a busy week for the wake-up call. There are going to be folks busy all over this country. I think that what is interesting, what is fascinating, what is telling is we can look at what is happening now. We can view the world of George W. Bush without Karl Rove. Now we get to see how the world operates without Karl Rove at George Bush's side. Now, I don't know if we're going too far to say this, but I wonder if the story. It's like the perfect storm. I wonder if we would have heard the story. I wonder if we would have gotten the feed. No, and maybe this isn't a Karl Rove story. Maybe this is just a story of, I think reporters are starting to feel emboldened a little bit. I think they're starting to feel like, well, we need to make up for all of this hush-up stuff that we did before. And one of the things that the good doctor is going to be talking about this morning as we discuss Bush on the couch is how mean George Bush is to these reporters. How he slices and dices them, which is hard to believe if you think that he is not very smart. He's mean. So now I think some of these reporters who have been the recipients of the mean treatment of this administration, maybe they're feeling emboldened. Maybe this isn't a Karl Rove story, the story of how we've got the actual footage and the actual audio of Bush handlers putting together that staged military response. Remember last week? George Bush sat down in front of an audio feed and a video feed of soldiers, and the soldiers were telling him how great things were going. And I mean, it was just like, okay, I'm going to lie to you, then you lie back to me. Then it'll be my turn to lie, and it'll be your turn to lie. George Bush was telling the troops, America really supports you all, huh? No, America doesn't support this war at all. And then the soldiers coming back to him saying that things were going good there. And what was interesting is we saw the feed of how the handler from the Pentagon was saying, this is your scripted answer, this is your scripted response, this is what you're supposed to say off script, and if you go off script, blah, blah, blah. So, I wonder if... Now, we got an incomplete audio feed of this. We got a complete video feed of this. People of all, I mean, the fact that this was a scripted event is not the news. The fact that this was a scripted event on tape, that's the news. It was stunning. It was stunning. I wonder if it would have been done in the absence of Karl Rove. I wonder if the story would have made it out. And I wonder if there is some reporter out there that says, you know, I think I can get away with this now. I think I can get away with releasing this now. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Is this a result of Karl Rove, or is it just a result of how Bush does stuff? In the beginning days of Katrina, military helicopters, remember the days when people were, the few people that were being plucked from building tops? 400,000 packaged meals land on a tarmac at Little Rock Air Force Base. Okay? During the first part of the early days of Katrina, 400,000 packaged meals landed on the tarmac at Little Rock Air Force Base. And they were whisked by tractor trailer to Louisiana. $5.3 million worth of food. But check it out. It never reached the victims of Katrina. Instead, they were concerned about Mad Cow from Great Britain. Now, these are the rations that British soldiers are eating out there. And Great Britain, who has a stronger rules and regulations about preventing and containing and addressing mad cow than America ever has. Their beef is safer than our beef. $5 million worth of food. And check it out, it's not just $5 million. Because it's costing American taxpayers $16,000 a month to store the meals. And now, okay, now understand this. Now this is just, is this twisted, this administration? Is this twisted America? Now this country is quietly, this administration is quietly looking for some needy country to give the food to. Huh? So, you didn't give it to us because it has mad cow concerns, but let me go give it to some poor starving country and let them get some mad cows. Is that what you're saying? No fewer than 6 federal agencies or departments had a role in accepting, distributing, and rejecting the food. Even now, there remains a disagreement within the Bush administration over which office shipped the meals to the 14 locations in Louisiana and which is responsible for paying the mounting storage fees. FEMA knew from emails that the stuff was moving out there. We never had any control or said anything about it. Huh? It was under the control of the U.S. Agency for International Development. Huh? But they said that their agency only provided logistics support, helping deliver it to the Gulf Coast region. A spokesperson for the British embassy said he was puzzled by the turn of events. Quote, there was a specific request for emergency ration packs, and we responded to that. We had no reason to believe that there would be any problems. Huh? We asked for it? Oh, maybe it's because George W. Bush doesn't care about black people. Maybe he didn't want them to get any food. By late September 8th, inspectors from the Agriculture Department halted the distribution because the packaged meals violated import laws that no beef or poultry of any kind is accepted from Great Britain. The journey began on September 5th as the first pack stacked 6 feet high and loaded onto pallets left Breeze Norton Air Force Base in Oxfordshire, in England. They were on a chartered flight. They flew 4,000 miles to Arkansas. It cost $4 million to fly the food there. A wire service photographer documented the arrival. The same day, 1 week after Katrina blew through the Gulf Coast. The rations then rode 355 miles to New Orleans. The USDA inspectors hit the road, literally chasing the delivery trucks to shelters. Severe flooding prevented the inspectors from reaching four sites, and by the time they had reached 10 others, about 115,000 meal packs had been distributed. Some were vegetarian. Others with meat in them should not have been handed out. The State Department said, "We've considered sending the food to Guatemala, but the impoverished country does not have the vehicles to transport the enormous pallets. For cultural reasons, the meals would be inappropriate for the Pakistani earthquake victims." No one wants this food to go to waste, says the State Department. Everyone wants them to be put to good use. Is this the madness of King George? Is that what we've come down to? Is this the madness of King George? We're paying for food to rot in warehouses. We're paying for poison food to rot in warehouses while we look for other countries to send the food to. Madness. Madness. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. Stay with me. But she doesn't hear a word that you say. Preoccupied. She's afraid. Afraid what they've been doing is not right. He doesn't know what to say. So he prays.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at the Sowers traffic and weather. Sowers traffic is sponsored by Mr. Good Sense Subs and Pastas. Illinois Route 140 at St. James Road. There's a report of an injury accident involving a tractor-trailer. Arch helicopter is en route as we speak. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and Germania, no problems. Report eastbound 44 from Lewis all the way to Merrimack River Bridge looks good. Eastbound 40 from Boone's Crossing to Lindbergh, everything's on the move. Eastbound 70 from Mid Rivers Mall Drive all the way into Blanchett Bridge, nothing to report this hour. Eastbound 70 between, northbound 270 between 44, everything looks good. Westbound 270 from 367 all the way into New Florissant Road looks good. Eastbound 70 at 79. Look for a very heavy volume this hour. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. No problems there. Westbound 64 all the way to the 5570 split looks good. Northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Everything's on the move. And finally, westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing. Nothing to report this hour. Also, Clarkson, before 40, there's a report of a deer that's been struck, so you may want to use caution. And Ballas at Olive, look for an accident there. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Mr. Good Sense Subs and Pastas. Mr. Good Sense is now serving hot ones. Try a hot roast beef and cheddar, a hot pastrami and Swiss, or a hot Philly Jack steak with cheese sub. Mr. Good Sense Subs and Pastas, home of the hot ones, serving hot ones at all 14 locations. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly sunny today, high in around 80. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Tuesday, partly cloudy with a high around 80. Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. And Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU under mostly clear skies, we have 58 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 60. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Always wanted to own your own home? Who doesn't? Ever worried about qualifying? Who hasn't? Never thought you'd qualify? Here's the answer to that question. Well, you will. Just call Lisa at 314-629-7830. Good credit, bad credit, no credit at all. owner financing on beautiful rehabbed houses. Call Lisa Krumpaski at 629-7830 for the answer to your home buying question. 314-629-7830 or mail ldkpc@hotmail.com.
Congratulations! You found Radio Free St. Louis online at WGNU.net. Remember, we're also at 920 on your AM dial in the St. Louis metropolitan area.
If you like to get things done in one easy step, Regional Exposure 2005 is the place to be on Saturday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 23rd from noon to 6 p.m. at St. Clair Square. Just one stop to see exhibits that represent hundreds of manufacturers, distributors, and services from around the region. Whether you're looking for new siding at the Anchor Siding Display or that unique craft item, product, or service you didn't even know you wanted or needed, you'll find it at Regional Exposure 2005. Plus, lively entertainment and dozens of prizes to be given away all weekend. Regional Exposure 2005, Saturday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 23rd from noon to 6 p.m. at St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Hosted by St. Clair Square. Sponsored by Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. More details at www.spcshows.com. This is a Specialized Promotional Concepts production. Wake Up Call family. We want to remind you that the second Wake Up Call blanket drive is now set for Friday, November 18th. And once again, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide those in need in our community with the gift of warmth. This year, we've set a goal of collecting 5,000 blankets. And with your help, we know we can make it happen. The Wake Up Call blanket drive will have two collection points again this year. In the lobby of the Congress and Senate building, the home of WGNU Radio, at 265 Union Boulevard. And at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue. Again, that date is Friday, November 18th. The need is greater than ever, and we're counting on you, St. Louis, for 5,000 blankets. Don't forget, the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive is Friday, November 18th, with a live broadcast from Carver House at 3035 Bell from 7 to 10 that morning. Thank you for what you did last year and what you will do this year. Coming up on October 17th, it's a special two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. We should call it Mondays at 8. Our special guest is Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank is a professor of psychiatry at George Washington Medical School. His publication takes a look at the actions of President Bush over the last several years. Dr. Frank says the inconsistencies and denials he exhibits are troubling. His tendency to avoid taking responsibility is a pattern that has gone on long before he became president, and this leads to concerns about the safety of all people whose lives he touches. This interview will be full of revelations that will seem outrageous. But when you put all the pieces together, the picture becomes clear. In addition, we'll have several copies of the book to give away to the listening audience during the interview. So don't miss this special edition of Mondays at 9, starting at 8, on Monday, October 17th, with Dr. Justin Frank and Bush on the Couch, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
You wanna know what you're gonna get in me? Just a little touch of star quality. And if that's the right, goes too far. It's because of the things you are. Beautiful town, I love you. And if I see those moments red, give your love a
Oh, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is the phone number, 454-6609 is the fax. Get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. We have so much stuff to talk about. I think that everything is coming together. I truly do. I truly do. You can't tell me that the it's not just that. It's not just that. Let me say it that way. It's not just that. Bush has been struggling in the face of worsening opinion polls. And we're talking about opinion polls that for the first time a plurality of Americans think he will be viewed as a failed leader. In a new study by the nonpartisan Pew Research Center, 41% said that Bush would be an unsuccessful president. That's up from 27 points in January. And the most expressing that view since he took office in 2001. Some 26% say that he will be successful. That's down 10% since January. A plurality of Americans, 48%, this is according to the Wall Street Journal, found that they would prefer the opposition Democrats to control Congress. That's compared with 39% who want Bush's Republicans. They're being called Bush's Republicans. You want to see some more evidence of that? A growing number of Republican activists say that Bush blundered in naming Harriet Myers to the U.S. Supreme Court, failing to anticipate the firestorm that it would ignite among conservative backers. Right now, the base is completely fractured and people are very concerned about the impact on the 2006 election. That's according to Manuel Miranda, who heads a coalition of 150 conservative and libertarian groups, and they all oppose Harriet Myers. Oops. The troubling thing is that the Supreme Court once was the gold ring, and the president's thinking appears to be indiscernible unless you are willing to take it as a matter of faith. Let me say that again, because it really feeds into the interview that we're going to be doing at 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock. The president's thinking appears to be indiscernible. You can't figure it out unless except for trust in me as you trust in God. Is what he's saying. Trust in me as you trust in God. There is a conservative rebellion afoot. Public opinion polls also haven't done much to bolster the nomination. And again, this shows you how important the press is. Because the press was right out front on Roberts. He's a good man. He's a qualified man. And that's the mantra that the press kept pushing. The press has been silent on Myers, and look, the public is making up their own minds, and it ain't good. A Wall Street Journal NBC News poll released earlier this week found that just 29% of Americans thought Myers was qualified to sit on the high court. 24% said she was unqualified. 46% said that they didn't know enough about her to decide. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette called on Bush to drop the nomination and spare the country, and I quote, any more embarrassment. Peggy Noonan, who wrote speeches for Bush's father, urged Myers to take the hit and withdraw so that the president could pick, quote, one of the outstanding jurors thoughtful conservatives have long touted. Syndicated columnist Charles Krauthmeier, quote, if Harriet Myers were not a crony of the president of the United States, her nomination to the Supreme Court would be a joke, as it would have occurred to no one else to nominate her. Ouch. 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 Were the Democrats? The Democrats have been conspicuously silent, preferring to watch the Republicans sniping. In fact, there's so much sniping going on, and this is all perfect storm. This stuff is just coming together. It's all coming together at the same time. There's a schism within the Republican Party. and it threatens Republicans' control of the Congress. This will be the demise of the majority, said Alan Simpson. Once they start giving each other the saliva test of purity, they lose. Even the supporters of Harriet acknowledge that Bush is in a tough and an unusual position. It is a rare instance of the base being displeased with a major decision of the president. That's what Sean Rushton, the executive director of the Committee for Justice, a group that backs Myers. That's what her friends are saying. However, he is saying, I don't see Bush backing down from this fight. He will do more to define her in the coming days, and she will define herself at the hearings. But yet and still, whether the Senate Judiciary Committee will oppose her remains an open question. Brownback and Coburn of Oklahoma have been publicly skeptical about the nomination. And not only has there been skepticism, there has been outright hostility in a private meeting of Republican aides on the Senate panel. My name is Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. You need to get to me. 454-0400 is my phone number. Trouble in the promised land. We have much to talk about. Stay with me.
One always picks the easy fight. One praises fools. One's mother's light. One shifts from left to right. Politics, the art of the possible.
Tuesday morning on the wake-up call, a look at the infamous Chain of Roxbridge murders. Marlon Gray was convicted of killing two sisters after robbing and raping them before they were thrown off the Chain of Roxbridge in 1991. But the state never proved he was on the bridge or that he was even there when the murders took place. Still, he was portrayed as the ringleader. The only witnesses who connected Gray to any crime were one of the four robbers who got a deal with the state and Thomas Cummins, a cousin of the sisters, who was the original suspect in the case. The prosecuting attorney who handled the case had 8 previous cases reversed due to misconduct. Cummins sued the St. Louis police, saying he was beaten into making a statement. He settled his suit for $150,000. Marlon Gray said the police also beat him and made him confess to raping the girls but not killing them. He filed a complaint but was not believed. Now Marlon Gray is facing execution October 26th. We'll talk to Marlon Gray live from death row on Tuesday morning, along with in-studio guests who bring you information you've never heard before. It all happens Tuesday morning here on The Wake Up Call.
You can ride with the James Gang. Just saddle up with Dennis James online at WGNU.net.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline New York. A reporter for the Knight Ridder News Service spent some time embedded with an all-Iraqi military division and says the operation was not very pretty. Tom Lassiter spent a week eating, sleeping, and going on patrol with a crack unit of the Iraq Army. He writes that the Bush strategy of turning over military control to the Iraqis is in some real serious trouble. It seems the soldiers he traveled with were more interested in exacting revenge against the Sunnis who oppressed them during the time of Saddam Hussein. Ethnic tensions are almost at the breaking point, and the mostly Shiite troops are getting ready for a civil war against the Sunnis, who are in the minority. And Dateline Washington. Political advisor Karl Rove testified for quite some time on Friday before a grand jury looking into the leak of the name of CIA operative Valerie Plame. Rove's attorney says prosecutors told them they had still not decided whether charges would be brought against him. Friday's testimony was probably Rove's last chance to convince the grand jury that he did nothing illegal when he spoke to two reporters about Valerie Plame and her husband, diplomat Joseph Wilson. Mr. Wilson says someone in the Bush administration deliberately leaked his wife's name to the press and damaged her ability to work undercover as retaliation against his publicly questioning the president's motives for invading Iraq. A reporter from Time magazine, Matt Cooper, also testified before the grand jury that Rove was the first person who told him Wilson's wife worked at the CIA, but he never mentioned her by name. The special prosecutor is apparently focusing the investigation on evidence that top administration officials started looking for information on Wilson and his wife in May and June of 2003. That's well before Wilson made any public statements about Bush's manipulating evidence to justify the Iraq invasion. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
Learn about dying things naturally at the August A. Bush Conservation Area, 2360 Highway D in St. Charles, on Wednesday, October 26th from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Since prehistoric times, humans have used plant pigments to enrich their lives. Learn which plants or berries can be used to make natural dyes and dye your own shirt. For more information, call 636-441-4554. Something to die for from WGNU.
And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? The Old Testament prophet Micah asked that question of his people thousands of years ago. Since 1994, that question has been one of the bedrock values of Hope for the Nations. In 20 countries around the world, Hope for the Nations turns today's orphans into tomorrow's leaders, provides security so children can become confident young people, actively trains them to become productive leaders in their society, and helps their communities to become self-sufficient. Learn more about Hope for the Nations and how you can become part of their worldwide ministry. Go online at www.hopeforthenations.com. That's www.hopeforthenations.com. Hope for the Nations, turning today's orphans into tomorrow's leaders since 1994. What is the Lord requiring of you? Coming up on October 17th, it's a special two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. We should call it Mondays at 8. Our special guest is Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank is a professor of psychiatry at George Washington Medical School. His publication takes a look at the actions of President Bush over the last several years. Dr. Frank says the inconsistencies and denials he exhibits are troubling. His tendency to avoid taking responsibility is a pattern that has gone on long before he became president, and this leads to concerns about the safety of all people whose lives he touches. This interview will be full of revelations that will seem outrageous, but when you put all the pieces together, the picture becomes clear. In addition, we'll have several copies of the book to give away to the listening audience during the interview. So don't miss this special edition of Mondays at 9, starting at 8, on Monday, October 17th, with Dr. Justin Frank and Bush on the Couch, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Like I'm invisible. Say that you won't treat me the way you're treating me. Say that you won't.
Welcome back. Luther, 454-0400 is my phone number. My name is Liz Brown. That's an appropriate song, Treating Me Like I'm Invisible. Things won't get better if you keep doing that. I want to share with you a letter written by Cindy Sheehan about whether or not folks should support Hillary Clinton in her continually more obvious attempt, continuously more obvious attempt to become president of the United States. This is what Cindy Sheehan has to say. I would love to support Hillary for president if she would come out against the travesty in Iraq. But I don't think she can speak out against an occupation because she supports it. Cindy Sheehan writes, I will not make the mistake of supporting another pro-war Democrat for president again, as I won't support a pro-war Republican. This country wants this occupation to end. The world wants the occupation to end. People in Iraq want this occupation to end. Senator Clinton, writes Cindy Sheehan, taking the peace road would not prove that you are weak. Instead, it would prove that you are the strongest and wisest candidate. As a mom, as an American, as a patriot, I implore you to have the strength and courage to lead the fight for peace. Cindy Sheehan writes about Hillary Clinton. She says, I want to support you. I want to work for you. But like many American moms, I will resist your candidacy with every bit of my power and strength unless you show us the wisdom it takes to be a truly great leader. Prove that you are passionate and reflect our nation's values and refusal to support imperialism, greed, and torture. Senator Clinton, come out against this occupation of Iraq because it is the politically expedient thing to do, not because it's the politically expedient thing to do, but because it is the humane thing to do. If you want to make Casey's sacrifice count, bring the rest of his buddies home alive. Isn't that something? The woman who wants to become president of the United States, a Democrat, a United States senator, is saying she's pro-war. And Hillary Clinton told Cindy Sheehan, I'm looking for an expedient time. Cindy Sheehan goes on to write, I thought the meeting with Senator Clinton went well. I thought she listened and heard what we had to say. I went with another Gold Star mother and my sister. I thought Mrs. Clinton listened, but apparently she didn't, because immediately afterwards she said the following to Sarah Ferguson of the Village Voice. Quote, this is what Hillary Clinton said. My bottom line is that I don't want their sons to die in vain. I don't believe it is smart to set a date for withdrawal. I don't think the time is right to withdraw. This is a Democrat and a woman Democrat talking about this outrageous, indefensible, wicked, lawless war. Cindy Sheehan goes on to say, that quote sounds exactly like what the few Republicans I talked to that week said. Making sure that our children don't die in vain sounds exactly like something George Bush says. A date for withdrawal? That sounds like what Rush Limbaugh said to me. That doesn't sound like an opposition party leader speaking to me. What Senator Clinton said after our meeting sounds exactly like the Republican Party talking points I heard from Senators Dole and McCain. Cindy Sheehan goes on to say, Senator Clinton is in California today to raise money for her political campaigns. An invitation to one star-studded gala read, quote, and I can barely read this. An invitation to a party fundraiser held by Hillary Clinton in California reads, and I quote, we must stand with Senator Clinton as she stands up for what we believe in. Hillary is and always has been our champion in the White House and the Senate. She's one of the strongest, most passionate, and intelligent Democrats. Huh? How is it passionate? How is it intelligent? How is it being a champion to wait for the right moment to state your opposition to this war? Cindy Sheehan goes on to say, I didn't get an invitation to any of the events. Maybe it's because she doesn't stand up for what I believe in. I don't believe in continuing this occupation of Iraq, and I don't believe in the killing any more of our soldiers. Because my son has already been and needlessly and tragically killed. I don't believe that she's passionate. I think she is a political animal who believes that she has to be a war hawk to keep up with the big boys. She's intelligent. There's no doubt about that. However, I believe that the intelligent thing for Democrats to do in 2006 and 2008 would be to come out strongly and correctly against the botched, bungled, illegal, and immoral occupation of Iraq. We all know that Senator Clinton, along with many other representatives and senators, voted to give George Bush the authority to invade a sovereign nation that was no threat to the United States. We know that they spinelessly abrogated their constitutional responsibility and duty to declare a war. We, and most of them, know that voting to give an irresponsible person authority to wage war was a devastating mistake. But I know that knowing all of that will not bring back my son or almost 2,000 other Americans back, and it won't bring back the nation's war dead either. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. We have a great show, an awesome show, an incredible show, if I do say so myself. I'm excited for this guest. I am excited for this guest. We're going to be talking to a doctor that is going to be analyzing the administration of a George W. Bush, psychologically analyzing Bush on the couch. You don't want to miss that, starting at 8 o'clock. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. I'll be back after the news. Stay with me.
Pull it out. There's no progress. You pull it all the way out. That's not progress. The progress is healing the wound.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's wondering.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Liz White. A warm welcome in the Windy City. ABC Cisco Cotto is in Chicago, where the World Series-bound White Sox just landed.
There are several hundred White Sox fans gathered here to welcome their team back to Chicago. Most of them have been up all night long, and they just don't care. They'll stay up as long as they have to cheer this team. They are so excited to finally be back to the World Series. Many players, after exiting the plane, got in vehicles and drove across the street to wave to these fans. Manager Ozzie Guillen got out of his car and waved at the fans, and they just went crazy. They are so excited to finally be going back to the World Series.
Chicago Sox beat L.A. last night and will face either Houston or St. Louis for their first shot at the championship in 46 years. GM CEO is expected to teleconference employees in about half an hour after negotiating all weekend with the UAW to cut the company's $6 billion health care bill. Rick Wagner has said there must be a deal to cut costs or the company will impose its own plan as it stands now.
GM is one of 4% of companies in this country where workers can actually pay nothing. So really, we're seeing the end of an era here.
ABC News financial contributor Melody Hobson says other automakers may do the same.
You can expect Ford and Daimler Chrysler to be right in there after General Motors asking for the same concessions. But when you look at the rest of the country and the rest of the companies that are out there, they've already been to this movie. They've really made these cuts already. We're already seeing most Americans share part of the health care burden.
A day after Iraq's constitutional referendum, the U.S. military says 70 insurgents were killed in clashes near Ramadi. Witnesses say about half were civilians. Here comes Tropical Storm Wilma, ties the record for the most storms in a single Atlantic season, now in the northwestern Caribbean. It may hit the Gulf Coast, possibly as a hurricane later this week. This is ABC News.
My name is Sarah, and when I was about 17, I started Fry Farms. I sold our first load of pumpkins to a local Walmart. And one by one, my brothers came home from college to join me in the business. 10 years later, we're selling millions of cantaloupes, watermelons, and pumpkins that can be found in Walmart stores across the nation. Walmart appreciated the quality of the local produce, and the rural communities have thrived because of our business with Walmart. It makes me feel great. I love it.
In heating, one thing stands alone.
That would be me, your Carrier furnace.
A Carrier Infinity furnace is the most energy efficient you can buy and can save up to 40% on energy bills versus previous models. Now that's hardworking.
Unlike your alarm clock, how hardworking could anything be with a snooze button?
Whether it's saving up to $1,100 with cool cash, our special financing, or saving on energy bills, the Infinity furnace is one hard worker. Carrier, turn to the experts. Limited time offer, restrictions apply. See participating dealer for details.
A weigh in a day may help keep the extra pounds away. A new study presented at an obesity conference in Vancouver deals with dieters who may regain a third of what they lose in the first year. Researchers say simply stepping on the scale each day can help. Prom canceled in Long Island, New York. ABC's Karen Chase has that story.
The party is over before it even started for kids at Kellenberg Memorial High School in Uniondale, New York, where the principal pulled the plug on the prom for excessive decadence. Brother Kenneth Hoagland says it's not the sex, drugs, or booze that bother him most. It's the overt flaunting of affluence.
We'll be looking flashy in my Mercedes-Benz.
He says every year it gets worse with liquor-laden limos, booze cruises, and even hooch houses in the Hamptons. Said Hoagland, Kellenberg is willing to sponsor a prom, but not an orgy. Karen Chase, ABC News.
I'm Brisbane.
Good morning, I'm Chris Lane, and this WGNU News Report is brought to you by Southwest Airlines. Missouri Governor Matt Blunt says he's pleased about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's action in a Missouri inmate's abortion request. Thomas issued a temporary stay Friday night, blocking a federal judge's order that the State Department of Corrections take the inmate to get an abortion Saturday. Blunt said in a written statement, "I'm pleased with Justice Thomas's stay of the lower court order that would have required the state resources be used to facilitate an abortion. Activist judges should not tell Missouri taxpayers how state resources are to be used. A corrections department policy bars the use of tax dollars to transport prisoners to get abortions. The pregnant inmate is at the Women's Eastern Reception Diagnostic and Correctional Center in Vandalia." Reverend Larry Rice and members of the New Life Evangelistic Center are urging the poor and elderly in the city of St. Louis to get prepared now for winter. Rice says because of higher heating costs, the poor and elderly will not be able to live like they have in the past.
So we're preparing. We're trying to help people get prepared. You see the squirrels. You see other forms of life after preparing to face winter. We do not see that preparation taking place. And unless people begin to prepare now, record numbers of people are going to be without natural gas service.
Rice says people need to think about winterizing their homes and find cheap and innovative ways to do so, such as making thermal curtains. A campaign is underway to make St. Louis area highways safer. Local and state officials have teamed up to increase law enforcement in five newly designated travel safe zones. Enforcement will be stepped up and new signs are on display on a five-mile stretch of I-70 west of the Poplar Street Bridge, another stretch of I-70 between Lake St. Louis and Wentzville, I-270 between Dorset and St. Charles Rock Road, I-44 between Route 109 and Pacific, and I-55 between Peavely and Festus. And finally, lawyers are registering their opinions on the 2005 tort reform law. Paul Hederman says he doesn't believe the law is doing what it's supposed to do, which is to lower the high insurance costs that healthcare providers have to pay. He believes that for tort reform to work correctly, there needs to be regulation in the insurance industry. A recent evaluation by attorneys attending the annual Missouri Bar Association meeting concluded that while forms of tort reform were good, such as affidavit of merit reform, aspects including hospitality liability failed their assessment. Southwest Airlines has three daily flights from St. Louis to Fort Myers, Naples. Are you thinking what they're thinking? Maybe it's time to see Fort Myers, Naples. Visit southwest.com today. That's the news for the 7 o'clock hour. Now here's Howard Morton with a look at traffic.
Good morning, St. Louis. 8 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Maximum Strength Zantac. Illinois Route 140 is closed at St. James Road east of Bethalto due to an injury accident involving a tractor-trailer. Traffic is being diverted through Holiday Shores. It's on the east side. Westbound 70 at Shreve, there's an accident. Two left lanes are blocked. Eastbound 40 at 170, look for a disabled bus in the right center lane is blocked. There's a short backup at this hour. Northbound 55 at 141 in Carondelet, no problems reported. Eastbound 44 from Chrysler all the way in the Merrimack River Bridge is slow in the right lane. Eastbound 40 at Mason Road, look for that traffic to be building. Eastbound 70 from 370 to the Blanchette Bridge, you still have some slow traffic going on there. Northbound 270 from 55 to 44, it is stop and go. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry to Graham Hanley looks good. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you still have slow traffic. Westbound 64 to 5570 split looks good. And northbound Illinois Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge looks like everything is rolling along well this hour. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank onto LaCleage Landing, everything is on the move. Route 110 at Fountain City Road, there's an injury accident involving a head-on collision in both directions. 255 at Camp Jackson, you have road construction. And also southbound 55 at Loughborough and Germania, you have road construction. Two lanes are closed. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Maximum Strength Zantac. It's so fast it prevents heartburn before a meal, and so fast it quickly relieves tough heartburn so you don't get impatient. Get Maximum Strength Zantac 150. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, Wednesday. Partly sunny skies today, high around 80. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Tuesday, partly cloudy with a high around 80. Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 58 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 60 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton, or 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Coming up on October 17th, it's a special two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. We should call it Mondays at 8. Our special guest is Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank is a professor of psychiatry at George Washington Medical School. His publication takes a look at the actions of President Bush over the last several years. Dr. Frank says the inconsistencies and denials he exhibits are troubling. His tendency to avoid taking responsibility is a pattern that has gone on long before he became president, and this leads to concerns about the safety of all people whose lives he touches. This interview will be full of revelations that will seem outrageous. But when you put all the pieces together, the picture becomes clear. In addition, we'll have several copies of the book to give away to the listening audience during the interview. So don't miss this special edition of Mondays at 9, starting at 8, on Monday, October 17th, with Dr. Justin Frank and Bush on the Couch, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Many are denied equal citizenship.
And so we
simply say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. I was just thinking, United States Senate, Congress, they've come back from a break, and they're back in town, theoretically, to do the people's business. This United States Congress will have an opportunity to respond legislatively to the needs that have been created by Katrina and Rita and possibly Wilma, if Wilma hits shore as a hurricane at the end of this week, hits the Gulf Coast again at the end of this week. And the amazing thing is, with all of the floating bodies as a result of Katrina, with all of the displaced American citizens as a result of Katrina, with the brunt of the overwhelming brunt of Katrina being felt by those who could afford it least, the amazing, astonishing, I guess the thing that makes us American in the year 2005 is that the solution that is being offered up by this administration is to provide more cuts and services for indigent people. It's insane. It's insane. Holding on to the giving wealthy people an additional $20,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, etc., advantage on their taxes that we pay for, and that's not free money, and cutting services to the poor after the poor has their faces were revealed with the winds and the hurricane of Katrina. That's insane, but I guess when we put it in context of other things that are going on in this at this time through this administration, I guess insane is a relative term. I want to talk about this morning some legislation that has come down from this administration. That approved by the House of Representatives Committee, that would be the biggest weakening of the Clean Air Act in history. And we need to talk about that because it's the assaults appear and feel relentless. To talk about the Clean Air Act, the gutting of the Clean Air Act, we need to talk to the president of Clean Air Watch, joining us from Washington, D.C., Frank O'Donnell. Frank O'Donnell, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, and thank you for inviting me on this morning.
It's a pleasure. A sad pleasure, but a pleasure nonetheless.
No, I understand, and I share your sentiments exactly about the sad time that we're living in on some of these issues.
Can you talk to us about, let's talk about the method and the manner that these changes occurred to the Clean Air Watch. Under the cover of darkness, would that be fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. Here are a couple of things that happened. In the House of Representatives, the oil companies and the gas station lobby got together and cooked up some legislation that is designed to weaken clean air requirements, and also to actually enhance the profits of the oil companies, which, of course, are already making many, many billions of dollars.
Record profits.
Absolutely record profits. Mm-hmm. ExxonMobil, I think, has already made $15 billion in the first half of this year, and they're going to announce their profits for the third quarter pretty soon. And I think people are going to be absolutely shocked when they see how high they are.
And, Frank, that's profit.
That's profit. That's
profit.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Absolute profit. And so the oil companies cooked up this argument saying, well, we can't refine enough because of environmental requirements. Total myth. The reality is they simply want to pocket more money. But they ended up writing legislation in the House of Representatives that never had a hearing, was then rewritten late at night without anybody having a chance to look at it. They brought it to the floor of the House of Representatives about a week before last, with literally no one had a chance to read it, and then just waived all the normal rules, held that they had a vote on it. The administration lost, and so rather than bring the vote to a close, they just kept it open until they could twist a few arms behind people's backs, get people to change their votes. And finally did that, and then prevailed by a 212 to 210 margin on legislation that's really quite appalling. What a couple of things it would do: it would postpone clean air standards in much of the eastern half of the country, including Missouri, of course. It would run roughshod over state and local governments who might want to object to any plan to expand or build a new refinery in their community.
Explain that, please.
Well, I would say essentially that the Federal Department of Energy, which is known to be very sympathetic to the energy industry, would be in charge of handling all the permits for any kind of plan to build or expand a refinery.
As opposed to the states?
As opposed to the states or local governments. State and local governments, which today, of course, have some voice in these matters for obvious reasons, that they're designed to look out for the interests of their communities.
Wait a minute. The party that says the party of states' rights, if you will, is taking away authority of a governor, of a mayor, of a town, of a city, of citizens to determine how these refineries work?
Yes, and putting it in the hands
of the federal government.
That's correct. That's why all the National League of Cities, the National Association of Counties, and the National Conference of State Legislatures were all very opposed to this for that very reason. And it's even worse than that, Liz. If you are a community, let's say you're an individual or a mayor or a community, a city council, and you object to, let's say, a permit given to an ExxonMobil, and you file a suit, that suit has to be tried in Washington, D.C., not in the local community.
Huh?
And if you lose, you would have to pay ExxonMobil's court costs.
Huh?
So, it's really it's a very one-sided thing designed really to just give more power and profits to oil companies. And no wonder the local governments and mayors are so upset about this.
And so in challenging or in turning the legal system on its head, they've said to what municipality, they have more money than a citizen, what municipality, what citizen, what state would take on the pockets, the deep pockets of ExxonMobil?
Well, that's exactly the point. It's obviously an attempt to intimidate any concerned citizen or community and try to persuade them not to even take it on, because it would be not even a David and Goliath. It would be a David and Goliath magnified 1,000 times to try to fight that kind of battle.
Yeah, David's infant brother.
Absolutely.
Against Goliath.
Absolutely. So you get the sense that this whole thing was rigged from the get-go, which it was, and it was shoved through the House of Representatives, and now it's going to be up to the United States Senate to stand up and basically do something right. We hope either do nothing. Now, the concern we have genuinely is the Senate may do something that's less offensive, and yet still get merged with this House plan as they go through the process and the House and the Senate agree on something. And when we end up with a monstrosity that would still be harmful to local communities and the people that live there.
Now, the vote was very close, two votes apart. And I am very upset and outraged to know that there were some members of the Black Caucus that supported this. And there were Democrats that support. I mean, two votes. It wasn't all the Democrats didn't vote no to this, did they?
Ultimately, all the Democrats did.
Oh, did they?
Ultimately, they did. They ultimately rallied together and did oppose this in a fairly rare show of party unity. I think partly because the Republicans acted in such a heavy-handed manner.
So this is
in trying to wedge this through and holding the vote open, etc. You had some Democrats initially voted in favor of it, and then were persuaded to vote against it.
So this is different than the energy bill itself.
Well, it's a different
type,
sort of a second round of the energy.
Exactly.
Bill, if you will. Yeah, it's a different from the energy bill that passed about 2 months ago.
Okay, so we had a rare show of Democrats. How many Republicans crossed over?
13.
Huh. Do you think that the United States Senate will be looking at that and determine how they're going to deal with this?
Well, I think so. I think even some of the more conservative Republicans in the Senate were embarrassed by the way the House acted. I mean, literally, you had, and I watched this on C-SPAN, and it was quite dramatic. Usually C-SPAN's very boring. In this case, it was actually quite an astonishing show where this vote was being held open so folks like Tom DeLay could twist people's arms to change their votes. And you had members of Congress going, have we turned into a banana republic? I mean, it really had the appearance of anarchy at that point where the majority rule was sort of being blown aside by the folks who were holding the gavel. So I think some Republicans in the Senate saw that. Senator Domenici of New Mexico, for example, said, we don't want to pass something like that here in the Senate. So I think that there is some reason to think there'll be a little more sanity on the Senate side.
Can the Senate just ignore the whole thing and kill the whole thing?
Yes.
How would they do that?
Well, they simply wouldn't take it up. I mean, ultimately, this legislation won't go anywhere further unless the Senate does something. And then the two of them get merged somehow.
Do you envision the Senate not doing anything at all on this?
Well, the concern I think we have is that the politicians in both houses, the House and the Senate, are so nervous because the voters are getting mad at high gas prices that they may pass something just so they can turn around and say, see, we did something about high gas prices. Now, of course, as you know, Liz, a couple of months ago they passed a bad energy bill and turned around and said, hey, look, we dealt with the energy problem. And, of course, they didn't.
And, in fact, it was so bad that now they're considering revisiting components of it in light of Katrina and in light of public sentiment to try to roll back some of the amazing things that went through as a result of that bill.
That's exactly right. So I think there is going to be some impetus for the Senate to do something, even if the only reason is to say, see, we dealt with the issue.
But then they also have that troublesome little piece of, okay, you did something and gas prices haven't changed, because there's nothing in this bill that would have any impact on anybody's gas prices.
That's right, and that is obviously one of the biggest problems that we face, is that essentially they're fibbing to the public in trying to imply that they're dealing with gas prices. The legislation that passed the Congress, the House, they even called it the Gas Act.
Mm.
As if to say, yes, we're dealing with gas prices. In reality, they're not. And in fact, they're not even willing to take on some of the issues that we need to improve the situation.
Let's talk about some of the enforcement components that this bill would, in your words, eviscerate. Let's talk about this new source review.
Sure. Well, right now, the Clean Air Act basically says if you have a big smokestack industry and it's old and it's billowing out a lot of smoke and you put a lot of money into it that would enable it to pollute more, that you are supposed to install pollution controls so that you won't forever be polluting and you won't forever be harming nearby communities and downwind areas and so forth. The lawmakers in the House put in a provision essentially that would repeal that provision. And even though that got pulled at the last second because it looked as though they wouldn't have the votes to do it, late last week, the Bush administration proposed doing the exact same thing in a regulation. So in effect, they are trying to do away with the current requirement that you put on some modern pollution controls if you have a big smokestack industry, like a power plant or a cement plant or a steel mill or something like that. You're not supposed to allow these things to run forever without cleaning up. You're ultimately supposed to clean them up, but the current administration is going to try to essentially give the industry what it wants, which is to avoid using pollution controls. And that means more harm, obviously, for breathers.
But also, this has an impact. This is kind of, it's contradictory, or it is curious that the Bush administration would advocate for this because of how the Justice Department has been able to use this particular provision.
Well, that's exactly right. Just last week, they announced an agreement with ExxonMobil, which, of course, is one of the biggest polluters, that they would use this very tool to clean up seven of its refineries in different parts of the country and reduce many, many thousands of tons of toxic, cancer-causing pollution as a result. So we have seen over and over again that this is a very effective enforcement tool in the law, and that seems to be why the big power companies and the big coal companies have lobbied so aggressively to try to get rid of it, because ultimately, if it's used, it does push some cleanup and brings us all cleaner air.
And it's just interesting to be sitting outside of this to listen to an ExxonMobil complain about this legislation in the midst of the highest profits ever. So the stock prices didn't go down when the Justice Department's made these rulings. And the profit margins didn't go down as a result of the Justice Department enforcing these rules that we have on the books. So it's really kind of amazing to hear them howl about how this hurts their bottom line.
Well, I agree with you. It obviously doesn't. The government has studied the issue pretty thoroughly and concluded that these kinds of clean air controls don't have any significant impact either on prices or on the ability of refineries, for example, to expand. They can expand all they want and still meet clean air requirements if they just spend a small percentage of those profits on the pollution controls. And we've seen that over and over again. So a lot of this is just protesting. I think they just like to get rid of as many requirements as possible. But obviously the public is going to pay if we do that, in terms of people's health, in terms of asthma, in terms of cancer, and many other health problems.
We're going to take a break, folks. I'm talking to Frank O'Donnell, president of the Clean Air Watch. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. Stay with us.
Now you never show it to me, do you? And remember when I moved in you, the holy dark was moving too, and every breath we drew was hallelujah.
Good morning, St. Louis. 33 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by GM Certified Used Vehicles. westbound 70 between Salisbury and Shreve. Stop and go due to an earlier accident. Eastbound, northbound 55 between Weber and Arsenal. No problems reported there. Eastbound 44 between Chrysler and Merrimack River Bridge. Look for slow traffic in the right lane as you approach 270. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason Road, you've got slow traffic. Eastbound 70 from Zumbel all the way to 270, everything's running smoothly. Northbound 270 from Tesson Ferry to 44 is stop and go. On either side of 40 Doherty Ferry, it's also stop and go as well. Westbound 270 from Chain of Rocks Bridge all the way to Washington Elizabeth, no problems report. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes to 79, you've got heavy traffic. Eastbound 40 between Ballas and Hanley, look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 40 between Clayton Skinker and Hanley, look for slow traffic as well. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street on the PSB, it is slow. Westbound 64 at the 5570 split, look for no problems report there. Northbound Illinois Route 3 onto the PSB, expect normal traffic for your 7:30 commute. And westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois side all the way onto Laclede's Landing, look for everything to be running smoothly. Illinois Route 140 is closed to St. James Road east of Bethalto. Expect restrictions due to an earlier accident. Route 110 at Fountain City Road, there's an injury accident involving a head-on collision, and in both directions, 255 at Camp Jackson, you can find road construction going on there. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by GM Certified Used Vehicles. Let GM Certified take the worry out of buying your next used vehicle. To learn more and find a dealer near you, visit GMCertified.com. GM Certified, no worries. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, Wednesday. Partly sunny today, high near 80 this evening. Partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Tuesday, pretty much the same. Partly cloudy skies with a high near 80. Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low near 60. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 60 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 61 under partly cloudy skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Always wanted to own your own home? Who doesn't? Ever worried about qualifying? Who hasn't? Never thought you'd qualify? Here's the answer to that question. Well, you will. Just call Lisa at 314-629-7830. Good credit, bad credit, no credit at all. Owner financing on beautiful rehabbed houses. Call Lisa Krumpaski at 629-7830 for the answer to your home buying question. 314-629-7830 or mail ldkpc at hotmail.com.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-376-9913.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for thousands of our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
According to IRS statistics, the average settlement for accepted offers and compromise was between 12 and 15 cents per tax dollar owed, which means you could qualify to reduce your tax debt by as much as 85%. If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-376-9913. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-376-9913. 9913. That's 800-376-9913.
Coming up on October 17th, it's a special two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. We should call it Mondays at 8. Our special guest is Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank is a professor of psychiatry at George Washington Medical School. His publication takes a look at the actions of President Bush over the last several years. Dr. Frank says the inconsistencies and denials he exhibits are troubling. His tendency to avoid taking responsibility is a pattern that has gone on long before he became president, and this leads to concerns about the safety of all people whose lives he touches. This interview will be full of revelations that will seem outrageous, but when you put all the pieces together, the picture becomes clear. In addition, we'll have several copies of the book to give away to the listening audience during the interview. So don't miss this special edition of Mondays at 9, starting at 8, on Monday, October 17th, with Dr. Justin Frank and Bush on the Couch, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call. The Wake Up Call Blanket Drive is set for Friday, November 18th. Volunteers are needed to man the two collection sites at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, and the lobby of the Congress and Senate Building, the home of WGNU, at 265 Union. Blankets to be accepted that morning starting at 6 o'clock. The actual broadcast from Carver House starts at 7. If you can help us help those in need, call the WGNU business office this morning at 454-6660 or email your contact information to revolution@lizbrown.com. All volunteers receive a free second annual Blanket Drive t-shirt as a thank you.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to Frank O'Donnell. He is the president of the Clean Air Watch. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Frank, one of the things I was saying before I got you on the air this morning was how Katrina and Rita wreaked havoc along the Gulf Coast, and how the issues of the poor were brought, as I thought, to the forefront. And yet and still today I'm hearing stories, reading stories about how this particular administration and these particular elected Republican members of Congress are advocating that the way to address the issues of the poor is to cut Medicaid and to cut food stamps and to get rid of a lot of programs that have done a little bit to help poor people. Is the same type of argument being made? It feels like I'm hearing the same type of argument being made on the energy field as well, that Rita devastated or Katrina devastated the epicenter of the U.S. energy industry, and now because it did that, we are going to be suffering because of high gas prices, and now we need to make these changes in the Clean Air Act.
Liz, I read the same story as you did, and I was appalled to see what they're considering, because so many people have suffered so much already. What I think we're seeing with the energy and the clean air aspect of this is that the tragedy of the hurricane is being exploited by some of the politicians to help special interests like an ExxonMobil and some of the other big oil companies and coal companies. And it's just really, frankly, very sad to see this happen. It really is blatant exploitation of it, and just the use of this tragedy as a pretext to grant some new breaks and new advantages to some of the most powerful corporations in our society already. And it's the kind of thing. It almost seems like it's going to continue widening the gap, if it's exceeded, widening the gap between the very rich and the very powerful and those of us who don't feel that we are that way.
And basically what we're hearing from them is that the oil companies were also hurricane victims, and they weren't, were they?
Well, some of the processes and refineries have been taken offline temporarily, but I think it's pretty hard to argue that as a whole that they're victims of it, and I think we're going to be seeing the proof of this in the next week or two as they roll out their third quarter of this year profit figures, which will include for the first time some sense of how the hurricane did affect their businesses. I think we're actually going to see their profits go up, and so it's going to be ridiculous, frankly, for them to argue that they somehow were victimized by the hurricane. We all know that the victims were the people who suffered from it.
But they're arguing that they are the victims. They're saying that they need this regulatory relief in order to basically stave off financial ruin.
And of course, that's an absurd argument. We know that the regulations, the clean air standards, have not had a significant impact on their business. They have been able to expand refineries at the same time as installing pollution controls when they've done it, and it's not hurt anything. They came up with a kind of mythical argument that, and the president himself has used this, frankly, very shamefully, because he knows the truth. He is an oil man, and he does understand the business. But they kind of say, well, there have been no new refineries built in the last 29 years, as if the culprit was some environmental requirements. And the reality is that oil companies have chosen not to build refineries because it costs lots of money to do it, first of all. They found it cheaper to just expand existing refineries. And the industry itself has tried to avoid making too much gasoline because it's simply a matter of supply and demand. If they made too much gasoline, the prices would drop. And so they have tried to manage how much they create in order to keep the profits as high as possible. In fact, there's proof of it. Memos have come out of oil companies in the 1990s saying we want to make sure that we don't expand refinery capacity so much that gas prices fall. So all this is very bogus, frankly. They're not victims. The attempt to weaken environmental standards and health standards is really just an attempt to exploit this tragedy to help special interests out. And that's one reason why we all hope that the Senate is going to take a deep breath and not follow suit along with what the House has been doing.
And when we talk about the facilities, because I think people need to get an understanding of the number of the facilities that we're talking about. We're not just talking about a handful in Texas or a handful along the Mississippi coast. We're talking about a whole lot of facilities, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. If you talked about refineries alone, I think you're talking about almost 200, but when they've made this attempt, as they have, to weaken the clean air requirements, the new source review that we talked about before the break, that is something that could literally affect 20,000 industries nationwide, factories, everything from refineries to coal-fired power plants to pulp and paper mills to any kind of big smokestack industry could be affected and could see weaker requirements as a result of some of the things that they're trying to use the hurricane to exploit.
And what do you advocate that people do? Because this is not a done deal yet. The Senate has to make a decision on this. So what do you advocate for folks to do?
Well, I think it would be very sensible if people wanted to contact, for instance, in Missouri, to call your Senate offices. Senator Bond is a very big player in this issue. He's on the committee that deals with this issue. And call him up and say, we don't want to see you weakening any kind of health or clean air standards as a result of these storms. We want you to make sure that they remain as strong as possible, maybe even strengthen them. Heaven knows they're actually not strong as they should be. And not try to pull some kind of a rollback of these requirements.
And
he'd be the first one I would go to, just because he is on the committee that is going to take up this issue in the near future. In fact, this week, I think.
And where can people find out more information about your organization?
We have a website. We'd love to visit. It's www.cleanairwatch.org. Clean Air Watch, all one word. And obviously you can email us through that website, too.
Very good. Frank O'Donnell, president of Clean Air Watch, thank you so much for this heads up.
Sure, Liz. Thanks very much. You have a nice day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, the wake-up call. We're going to take a break. I'll be back to get some of your calls, some of your comments, as we move towards our interview on the issue of Bush on the couch. You know what? I think America needs to get on. Some Americans need to get on that couch with him, too. Some of them help bring them to us. We'll be talking about that and much, much more. Stay with me.
They lie, they cheat, they steal, they fake it. But I'm gonna make it. Lord, I can take it. I'm the greatest man alive. Cut the drama, boy, save it for your mama. I'm the greatest man alive.
hands sweating. Know I got to get it. I'm done.
Akbar Electric. Commercial, industrial, residential. 3737 North Kings Highway. 382-2568. 382-2568. Any and all electrical installation and rehab, basic service installation, light fixtures, dusk to dawn lighting, motion sensors, no job is too big, no job is too small. 35 years of experience. Akbar Electric. Give them a call. 382-2568.
This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline Moscow. Russian leaders say they will not join the United States in efforts to convince Iran to stop its nuclear program. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov over the weekend, and he told her although Russia would not like to see Iran have nuclear weapons, that country does have a right to have enriched uranium. Russia and Iran have close trading ties. And Dateline San Juan. An inquiry by the government of Puerto Rico pertaining to the number of soldiers killed and wounded in Iraq who are Puerto Rican citizens has revealed that the United States Defense Department is grossly underreporting the number of casualties. After a review of several documents, the Puerto Rican news agency La Prensa says that over 4,000 troops under U.S. command have died in 2 years of combat. That figure is nearly twice as many as the casualty count issued by U.S. authorities, which is right around 2,000. Professor Joseph Beruf from the University of Puerto Rico says that the 4,000 number clearly shows the troops are slowly being worn down. The traditional military theory is that in order to win a guerrilla-type war, you have to kill 10 insurgents for every one of your soldiers. And that would mean 40,000 insurgents would have had to have been killed by now to call this operation a success. The U.S. military is only counting dead soldiers as official casualties if they die while in Iraq. If they die after being medically evacuated from the country, they are not part of the official count. And the U.S. does not include any information on the number of Iraqi troops that have been killed while serving under the command of the coalition forces. This is your wake-up call global news update.
At Halloween, it's all about the scare, the fright, the horror. For the most scare anywhere, come to Hollow Weekends at Worlds of Fun every weekend from September 24th through October 30th. We have five times the, and five times more. And you still get all of it. Hollow Weekends has five extreme haunts. Camp Gonna Get You With Your Hatchet. Carnival of Carnivorous Clowns. The Lore of the Vampire. The Fright Zone. The new Dominion of Doom. Plus, all our coasters for one low price. So you can scare them out of yourself over and over again. One ticket, unlimited thrills. Hollow Weekends at Worlds of Fun. We've got the haunt that you want. Sponsored by Kansas City area Toyota dealers. Visit worldsoffun.com to book your reservation at the new Worlds of Fun Village Resort.
Examine life from the police perspective. Put down the police scanner and pick up Gary Wiegert on WGNU.net.
Wake Up Call family. We want to remind you that the second Wake Up Call blanket drive is now set for Friday, November 18th. And once again, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide those in need in our community with the gift of warmth. This year, we've set a goal of collecting 5,000 blankets. And with your help, we know we can make it happen. The Wake Up Call blanket drive will have two collection points again this year. In the lobby of the Congress and Senate building, the home of WGNU Radio, at 265 Union Boulevard. And at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue. Again, that date is Friday, November 18th. The need is greater than ever, and we're counting on you, St. Louis, for 5,000 blankets. Don't forget, the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive is Friday, November 18th, with a live broadcast from Carver House at 3035 Bell from 7 to 10 that morning. Thank you for what you did last year and what you will do this year.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. I'd like to just take a minute right now to ask you all. I know that some of you have had a chance to hear some of the spots that we have been running about the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. We're going to need some volunteers to help with the blanket drive. And I'm asking you all to give Howard a call right now at 454-6660. You'll get a free T-shirt, a blanket drive, a wake-up call blanket drive T-shirt. And you'll also be secure in the knowledge that you participated in something that is very, very, very valuable and very impactful upon the city of St. Louis. I can still, if I close my eyes, I can still remember the faces of the men, the women, the children, black and white, young and old, single, married, all homeless, all in need of something, a little something, to help them through a cold winter. I really could use the help, because it's grown, and it is bigger than it's going to be bigger than it was last year. So we could use some volunteers. And give us a call here at 454-6660. Talk to Howard. Leave your name and address. This is something that we must do. It is something. We gave away sleeping bags, brand new. And we bought blankets last year for $5 a piece. We gave them away. We did nearly 2,000 blankets last year, all said and done, all donations included. It was an amazing thing. With just a couple of weeks of notice with you all. So please, give us a call here and pledge your support and your participation in the blanket drive. It's going to be November 18th and 19th. We'll need volunteers for Friday to pick up the blankets, and we'll need volunteers on that Saturday to deliver the blankets. Or email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. My name is Liz Brown, without the .com. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Pastor, good morning.
Good morning. I was trying to get Howard to, if you need a large truck again this year, I would be available to do that for you.
Pastor Brown, I would love that. And yes, we do. Yes, okay. We do. If you can leave your phone number with Howard, I'll be calling you, because we're going to have a strategy meeting also of the folks that will be working on the blanket drive this year. So that would be great.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much, Pastor. I'm going to put you on hold.
All right.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank those that helped with the blanket drive last year. Also, I would ask you, now that we're a month outside of the blanket drive, and what I would like to do, folks, to do is go to your places of business, go to your children's school. Start the blanket drive, start the wake-up call blanket drive at your school, with your sororities, with your fraternities. Set some goals. Now, we're going to 30 blankets, 40 blankets. We're going to do this. Start putting the gauntlet down, putting the wake-up call gauntlet down for the number of blankets that we're going to do this year. Pastor Brown last year was so generous. Without his truck, we wouldn't have been able to do it. We wouldn't have been able to hand out all of the blankets. We loaded up all of the blankets in one big truck, and we were able to get them out. And I need to put out a special call to Otis Woodard. I would like for him to give Howard a call at 454-6660. We need I need to get in contact with you. I need some help from you. So this is going to be, I just feel it in my bones. I've talked to a whole lot of people that are going to be coming out front on this blanket call. I mean, on this blanket drive, wake-up call, blanket drive. It's going to be something special, and I really want all of you all to be part of it. Let's do something. Let's do something amazing. Let's do something magical. You'll all get a free T-shirt. How cool is that? And the design for the T-shirt is going to be spectacular, because it's always spectacular when Mark Carroll does our design work. So you'll want to have this as part of your T-shirt wardrobe, and also the wonderful experience of participating in the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Are you ready, y'all? We're going to do some heavy, heavy, heavy lifting next hour, and the hour after that, we're going to put George W. Bush on the couch. We're going to be handing out some free books. You don't want to miss the next 2 hours. I'm so excited. I wish I could. I wish we could do it longer. The book was amazing, and this interview is going to be astounding. You don't want to miss this. And just remember this. What do frogs and George W. Bush have in common? The answer to that and so much more when we do George Bush or Bush on the Couch. Stay with us, folks.
WGMU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Liz White. Big losses lead to big concessions. GM, the company, just announced a tentative deal with the UAW to help lower health care costs.
We had a corporate loss of about $1 billion or $1.1 billion this year, down from last year's third quarter profit of about $315 million.
CEO Rick Wagner. More from ABC News financial contributor Melody Hobson.
Even though they sell almost 5 million cars a year and they employ over 150,000 people, General Motors is not the company that it used to be. In 1999, it was the largest company in the United States based upon its value. Today, it ranks 169th. So there's been a major change in this company and its effect on the U.S. economy.
Chicago White Sox fans are basking in the glow of their first trip to the World Series in decades.
When I was 5 years old, my grandmother used to take me out to the ball game, the Sox game. I'm 60 for 55 years. I've been going out there. It's about time.
They beat L.A. last night, the first shot at the championship in 46 years. No official results yet from Iraq's constitutional referendum, but it is expected to pass, which may mean
hundreds of thousands of Sunnis could soon be living under a constitution they did not want. And some are threatening civil war.
ABC's Martha Raddatz. The U.S. military says about 70 militants were killed in airstrikes near Ramadi. Witnesses say more than half of the dead were civilians. Tropical storm Wilma's turning in the northwestern Caribbean.
Because it's not moving very fast and has this erratic motion, it's going to remain in the northwest Caribbean for at least most of the week.
Tricia Wallace with the National Hurricane Center. It could hit the Gulf Coast later this week, maybe as a hurricane. The National Zoo's new baby panda has just been named with plenty of fanfare, Tyshawn, which means peaceful mountain. This is ABC News.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
There are thousands marching on Washington as
a generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477.
Ameriprise Financial Services, member NASD and SIPC.
I seen them thump. I seen them bounce. I seen them modded. Man, I've even seen them souped up. But I ain't never seen them spin. My name is David Folks, and I discovered the spinning wheel.
Let's all discover something that people can't stop staring at. Monday night start at 8 with American Hot Rod, followed by Monster Garage at 9 and American Chopper at 10. An all-new Monday starts at 8 on the Discovery Channel.
It's tougher to file for bankruptcy as of today. A new bankruptcy law kicks in, making it harder to liquidate. Anyone who wants to file will have to go to credit counseling and come up with documents, including tax returns, pay stubs, and statements from those you owe. Tops at the box office this weekend. ABC's Dave Alpert has the rundown from Hollywood.
Moviegoers were looking for a good scare this weekend.
Somebody out here?
The Fog rolled in at number one.
There's something in the fog.
The horror film remake made $12.2 million in its opening weekend. Finishing second, last weekend's number one movie, Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, $11.7 million. Director Cameron Crowe's quirky new romantic comedy, Elizabethtown, starring Orlando Bloom and Kirsten Dunst, debuted at number three. Flight Plan and In Her Shoes round out the top five. Dave Alpert, ABC News, Hollywood.
I'm Liz White, ABC News.
Good morning, I'm Chris Lane, and this WGNU News Report is brought to you by Mr. Good Sense Subs and Pastas. Society needs to value human life. That was the message from Terry Schiavo's brother, who spoke at yesterday's Respect Life convention in downtown St. Louis. Bobby Schindler says some good has come out of his sister's death because of the awareness it's raised. Schiavo died in March after her husband, Michael Schiavo, won a long legal battle to have her feeding tube removed. Jim Cavizel and his wife Carrie delivered the keynote address at the annual event. A campaign is underway to make St. Louis area highways safer. Local and state officials have teamed up to increase law enforcement in five travel safe zones. Missouri Department of Transportation Director Pete Ron says it will take teamwork to reach the goal of having less than 1,000 fatalities on Missouri's highways by 2008.
There were over 100 partners from law enforcement and community leaders from across the state who came together to help us develop the blueprint for safer roadways. And it is that effort that I believe will succeed.
There were 1,130 deaths on Missouri's highways in 2004. This year's figures are on pace to surpass that number. The first travel safe zones are a 5-mile stretch of I-70 west of the Poplar Street Bridge, another stretch of I-70 between Lake St. Louis and Wentzville, I-270 between Dorset and St. Charles Rock Road, I-44 between Route 109 and Pacific, and I-55 between Peavely and Festus. Reverend Larry Rice and members of the New Life Evangelistic Center are urging the poor and elderly in the St. Louis city to get prepared for winter. Rice says because of higher heating costs, the poor and elderly will not be able to live like they have in the past. He says people need to think about winterizing their homes by finding cheap and innovative ways to do so, such as making thermal curtains. Additionally, he says those who can afford it need to think about donating blankets, socks, and thermal underwear. And finally, the Cards hope to ascend the NLCS back to St. Louis with a victory over the Astros in tonight's Game 5 at Minute Maid Park. The Cardinals are on the brink of elimination after yesterday's 2-1 loss to the Houston Astros in Game 4 of the NLCS. The first pitch is scheduled for 7:28 tonight. Mr. Good Sense is now serving hot ones. Try the hot roast beef and cheddar, hot pastrami and Swiss, or the hot Philly jack cheese steak sub. Mr. Good Sense Subs and Pastas, home of the hot ones, serving hot ones at all 14 locations. That's the news for the 8 o'clock hour. Now here's Howard Morton with a look at traffic.
Good morning, St. Louis. 8 minutes after the hour, 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Southwest Airlines. Westbound 70 between Poplar Street Bridge and Shreve is stop and go due to an earlier accident. Police are still working with it on the shoulder. Southbound 170 at 40, there's an accident that's been cleared, but you may see a bit of a brief slowdown. Eastbound 364 at Maryland Heights Expressway, there's an accident there. Eastbound 44 at 141, look for an accident in the right lane right exit lane is partially blocked this hour. Traffic is getting around it, however. Northbound 55 between Gravois and Poplar Street Bridge, slow due to an earlier accident on westbound 70 at Shreve. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and Mason Road, look for slow traffic there. Northbound 270 from Teslon Ferry all the way into Marshall Road, you've got stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 270 from Old Hall's Ferry to West Florissant, expect slow traffic this hour. Eastbound 70 between T.R. Hughes and 79, you've got slow traffic. Eastbound 40 between 270 and Hanley, look for stop-and-go. Westbound 40 between Clayton Skinker and Hanley, you've got slow traffic as well. Eastbound 70 between 270 and St. Charles Rock Road, you've got slow traffic. Westbound 5570 split from 64 onto the PSB. Look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 64 at the 5570 merge, however, look for slow traffic there as well. Northbound Illinois Route 3 from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 all the way into Laclede's Landing. Everything is slow-go in your 8 a.m. commute. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Southwest Airlines. Southwest has three daily flights from St. Louis to Fort Myers, Naples. Are you thinking what they're thinking? Maybe it's time to go to Fort Myers, Naples. Visit southwest.com today for more details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly sunny skies today, high around 80. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Tuesday, partly cloudy with a high around 80. Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high around the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 62 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 62 as well. Stay tuned now. It's time for an extra hour of Mondays at 9 with your host, Liz Brown. She's up next on the wake-up call. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I say? Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember?
Saying that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how
but the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
I think I'm hearing
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome to a special edition, a two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. Of course, we're starting at 8 o'clock to get all of this in. It seems like almost every day for the last 5 years, I have, on my way into the wonderful job that I have of being a talk show host, and the 4 hours that I am blessed with to be able to discuss issues and bring information to the worldwide audience that we have here on the Wake Up Call. Almost every morning, in the wee hours of the morning as I head towards the studio, I find myself shaking my head in utter amazement at the government that we have, at the folks that we have in charge of our government, and in particular at the policies and the practices and the behavior of the man that sits in the White House in the office of the presidency. I remember when I heard these words, it's almost like one of those, where were you when Kennedy was shot? Where were you when Martin Luther King was assassinated? Where were you when the O.J. Simpson verdict came down? It's one of those seminal moments that almost, that folks that are into the political world can almost remember what coffee they were drinking at the moment that they heard these words.
There are going to be some times where we don't agree with each other, but that's okay. If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier, just so long as I'm the dictator.
I mean, that wasn't the conversation. Those weren't the words of a sixth grader who wanted to be the king of dodgeball. Those are the words that came out of the mouth of the man that has his finger on the button, not just to impact our lives, but to impact the lives of millions, billions of people spread all out over this entire place we call Earth. And I have not only wondered about him, I've wondered about not only do I shake my head about him, I shake my head about the people that he surrounds himself with. I shake my head about his mom. I shake my head about his dad. And I am not a psychiatrist. I am not a psychologist. I'm a little old lawyer out here who happens to be a talk show host. So I do not have the requisite training or education to probe into the mind of George W. Bush, but I certainly have had a motivation to do so, given the things that are said and the things that are done. And so it was with great interest and actually a bit of pleasure when I heard about an individual who has the credentials and has the education and the experience to examine, who wrote a book that examines the mind of an individual, an adult, a grown all the way up man who sits in the White House and muses over the fact that a dictatorship is fine as long as he gets to be the dictator and says it out his mouth, as the kids say, out his mouth. We need to talk about the mind of such a man
And we're going to do that for 2 hours this morning as we expand Mondays at 9 to include 8 o'clock. And we're going to have that discussion with Dr. Justin Frank. He is joining us from Washington, D.C. to talk about a book that he has written, a book entitled Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm outstanding.
Good.
Dr. Frank, I have read your book. I have talked to all my friends about your book. Everybody that I know is looking forward to discussing this because George W. Bush is an amazing man.
Yes, he is.
So what I'd like to do, since this is the beginning of our conversation, talk to us about why it is that this caught your interest. How did the mind of George Bush catch your interest?
Well, the mind of George W. Bush caught my interest because I was quite concerned when I was looking at him in the 2000 campaign. I noticed certain things that were very troublesome, that there was a disconnect between the look in his eyes and the words that came out of his mouth. That was the first thing. And that disconnect, I wasn't sure how to read when I watched on television what that look was, but there was clearly a disconnect. And I don't think it was just that he was reading teleprompters the way other the way every politician does. It seemed like there was that he wasn't integrated in terms of inside himself. There were like bits of him here and there. And then the second thing that disturbed me was his finally admitted DWI that happened a couple of weeks before the election. But that what was most disturbing was his response to it, which was first of all that he continued to drink for 10 more years, but his response to the press about why he never told his children, because he didn't want them to end up in a similar situation, which is, of course, the opposite of why you do tell. I mean, you should tell people about what's going on, especially in your family. And, of course, his children already were in very much in for substances that were abusive. And the third thing that bothered me about him that I was noticing was something that was seemingly insignificant, but he was interviewed on the Jay Leno show, as was Al Gore the week before, and Jay asked this kind of softball question about, can you tell the audience about something that you're embarrassed about or that might have been embarrassing in your past? And he couldn't think of anything. And I was struck by his inability to think, A, on his feet, and B, anything that had to do with something that might be critical of himself, that he would even be able to laugh at himself about.
But Dr. Frank, it wasn't just that he couldn't say anything about himself, but he sure told an embarrassing story about his brother.
Yes, and he followed that with a terribly embarrassing story about his brother urinating in the family iron when he was about 6, and everybody laughed, but it was really the kind of humor that you would hear in a fraternity house or with people who were much younger than that. And it was quite striking that he would not only not be able to think, that's right, I think you're exactly right, that he would also blame other people, including especially somebody in his own family. So those things made me, you know, sit up and take notice. And I was also struck by how people on the left who were criticizing him were laughing at him for being stupid, and they would notice
we need a new word.
Yes, his Bushisms, and they started a whole industry of that. But I was feeling that they were missing the point about him, and I got alarmed that people didn't understand that he had a good chance of winning the election, and I would argue with my friends. And the only people who really seemed to notice that there was something funny about him, of course, I mainly know other therapists, but were people in my field. The people on the left didn't notice that. They just were worried about him, but they were more concerned about the similarities between him and Gore, and a lot of them were in favor of Nader for that reason. And I used to get in these huge arguments. I said, there's huge differences. And I was just noticing this all, because I'm also political in addition to being a psychoanalyst. I've been very active in politics. And I just got worried about him, and worried about what kind of a person he was, and there was something wrong with him that was just disturbing me, all of those things. So then I just sort of watched, and then about a year later, after 9/11, it became very clear to me that I couldn't think about too many other things. I was asked to give a paper and give a talk about a particular psychoanalytic theory, and I said that I really can't do that unless I can apply it to political life. I won't do it with one of my clinical patients. And so I ended up thinking about much more about George Bush and started working on the book.
And can we back up just for one second,
sure.
Doctor? Because before we get further into to your assessments of George W. Bush, there are people out there that are listening right now, criticisms that I have received prior to this interview about how can you basically diagnose somebody in absentia? How can you not have somebody on the couch and assess their mental capability, their mental state? There's a thing called a discipline, if you will, of applied psychology. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I think that that's a very important question that your people in your audience are raising, because it is confusing to people about diagnosing someone when you're not seeing them in your consulting room. But basically, applied psychoanalysis is essentially trying to applying psychoanalytic principles and ways of thinking about the unconscious, about motivation, looking at patterns of behavior, especially patterns are very important when you think about a person's life history, and looking at reactions in times of crisis and thinking about those things, especially in terms of also their family background, knowing as much as you can about them and reading everything they wrote, as ways of then studying and applying psychoanalytic principles to a public figure or a historical figure or even a figure in literature.
There's a historical precedent.
It's been started by
yes.
Freud. It's been done forever, since in the last 100 years at least, and the CIA does that now. That's how they study foreign leaders. They have psychoanalysts. In fact, a couple of my colleagues and one of my students work right now for the CIA, and they spend time profiling international leaders and national leaders without ever having met them, and this is part of a natural discipline, and I felt that I was in a very legitimate tradition. What was different was that nobody's ever done that with a sitting president. There have been some studies of Nixon, for instance, after he left office, and studies of other people, but I felt that it was really too important to let slide. And the other thing about the accuracy of this is that I'm struck by how accurate my book is about him. Anybody who's met him, uh-huh. Anybody who's written, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
I just wanted to I can't disagree with the accuracy of it, but I also wanted to talk just for a second as we talk about this applied psychology component of it. You as a medical doctor, as
yes.
a psychiatrist, you have an advantage, or there is an advantage in analyzing someone like George Bush, because it's if I were to come and lay on your couch, if somebody else were to come and lay on your couch, I would only be telling you my history from as I knew it. I wouldn't be able to tell you all kinds of things about my parents, because my parents wouldn't have told me everything about themselves.
Right.
You have an advantage in analyzing someone like this because there have been books written about them and all kinds of other anecdotal evidence that you don't have with your other patients.
Yes, I actually know a lot more about him than it takes me a long time with my own. Thank you. That's very helpful, because it actually takes me a long time with my own patients. Sometimes I've worked with somebody for I remember working with somebody for several years before finding out that they even had a brother. It's amazing that people don't talk about things. Well, it's not amazing, but it's part, it goes with the territory. Whereas with President Bush, it's been very clear that there's been writing about him by both of his parents. They both have memoirs. In fact, his mother has two, father has one. Yeah, he's written about himself, and then there's other books about him. So I know a lot about his childhood, a lot about the facts of his life. And the facts of his life are not necessarily the emotional facts, but they are actual facts, and they can be looked at in terms of various patterns of behavior.
And you can look at them in a much more linear way than you could with your own patients, because human beings tell you the information in the patterns that they want to tell it to you, not necessarily from A to Z.
Right. I look much more with my patients by necessity in a lateral way, where I'm looking as they associate and talk about things that are coming into their minds and the things that they want to tell me. Whereas with President Bush, he didn't want to tell anybody that he had been arrested for DWI, for instance, and I only found that out on television. But once I started reading and learning about him, all that information was available.
And there's one more thing I want to get to before we take a break. You mentioned earlier that you are politically involved. How you're politically connected and you have an opinion politically. How can you have an opinion about the politics of George W. Bush and also do a psychoanalytic evaluation of his character? Can you do both of those things?
It's really difficult, and I struggle with that a lot in writing the book and in thinking about him. The one thing that has come out in all of my years of practice, which has been over 30 years, is that I've treated people who've been of all kinds of political stripes in my office, and what I find is their humanity, and I find certain things that they have in common, and I pay attention to the fact that everybody is, shall we say, more human than otherwise. And in fact, one of the things that was people who were more liberal than I am criticized about the book was that it seemed too sympathetic to him because it made people feel that he really did have some serious losses and traumas as a child, and that does help understand him, and that I was really not seeing him as just this purely kind of bad person or any of those things, and I don't see him that way. And I think but my politics certainly inspired me in part to write the book. So I have to say that is true. But I really don't feel that they've interfered that much with this. I've also shown the text of what I've written to several colleagues who don't have the same political points of view when I wanted to check on the psychology of it and talk to them about some of my thoughts about the dynamics. And I showed it to maybe four or five different professionals who were also psychoanalysts and colleagues of mine, and they gave different comments about it and helped me kind of structure my thinking.
And we're going to have to take a break. And when we come back, let's go back, Doctor. Let's go back to the childhood of George W. Bush. And I'd like to start with his mom.
Okay.
I'm talking to Dr. Justin Frank. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. We're talking about his book, Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President, Dr. Justin A. Frank. This is a special two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Hard road to travel and a rough way to go. Said it's a hard road to travel.
And if I determine that it is in the national security interest of our great land to try by military commission those who make war in America, then we will do so. We owe it to our citizens to be relentless and methodical in tracking down terrorists and bringing each and every one of them to justice.
All alone.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920. Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the NFL. Westbound 70 between Edward Jones Dome and Shreve has returned to normal after an earlier accident. Eastbound 5570 at 64, that accident has been cleared. Eastbound 44 at 141, that accident has been cleared as well. Northbound 55 between Virginia and 44, no problems reported. Eastbound 40 at Mason Road, that traffic is easing. Eastbound 70 between Zumbel and 270, look for no problems reported. Northbound 270 from Gravelway to 44, you still have slow traffic. Westbound 270 between Chamber Rocks Bridge and West Forest, and expect normal traffic this hour. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Hanley, you've got slow traffic. Westbound 40 between Clayton Skinker and Hanley, you've got slow traffic. Westbound 5570 split from Tudor Avenue onto the PSB. It is slow. Westbound 64 at the 5570 merge. Look for that traffic to return back to normal. Northbound Route 3 between 8th Street and the Poplar Street Bridge is returned back to normal. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing. Everything is on the move there as well. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the NFL. Sprint presents 2006 Pro Bowl balloting. Log on to NFL.com and vote for your favorite players. You pick the X's and the O's. Sprint, the official wireless telecommunications service sponsor of the NFL. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly sunny skies today, high near 80 this evening. Partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Tuesday, partly cloudy skies with a high near 80. Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the around the 60-degree mark. Then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies once again with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 62 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 62 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's a special edition of Mondays at 9 that follows these commercials. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Always wanted to own your own home? Who doesn't? Ever worried about qualifying? Who hasn't? Never thought you'd qualify? Here's the answer to that question. Well, you will. Just call Lisa at 314-629-7830. Good credit, bad credit, no credit at all. Owner financing on beautiful rehabbed houses. Call Lisa Krumpaski at 629-7830 for the answer to your home buying question. 314-629-7830 or mail ldkpc@hotmail.com.
Guy Gulman keeps you company after dark. Online at WGNU.net.
Hi, friends. Heloise here for CitraCal Calcium Citrate. I want you to turn today's hint into a habit. Take CitraCal every day. Recent studies have proven CitraCal's bioavailability. That means CitraCal gives your body the calcium it needs so it doesn't have to rob the calcium stored in your bones. That can lead to osteoporosis. For something this important, please don't settle for store brands. Insist on CitraCal. I do. That's why I'm a CitraCal gal.
No prescription drug coverage? Now there's help. Introducing the Merck Prescription Discount Program. You may be eligible for discounts of 15 to 40% on Merck drugs regardless of age or income. Call 1-800-50-MERCK to enroll. It's free to join and there are no membership costs. The new Merck Prescription Discount Program. It's one more way Merck puts patients first. Call 1-800-50-MERCK.
Wake up call family. We want to remind you that the second Wake Up Call blanket drive is now set for Friday, November 18th. And once again, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide those in need in our community with the gift of warmth. This year, we've set a goal of collecting 5,000 blankets. And with your help, we know we can make it happen. The Wake Up Call blanket drive will have two collection points again this year. In the lobby of the Congress and Senate building, the home of WGNU Radio, at 265 Union Boulevard. And at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue. Again, that date is Friday, November 18th. The need is greater than ever, and we're counting on you, St. Louis, for 5,000 blankets. Don't forget, the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive is Friday, November 18th, with a live broadcast from Carver House at 3035 Bell from 7 to 10 that morning. Thank you for what you did last year and what you will do this year.
Around the world and behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I can remember my mother sitting behind the backstop in Midland, Texas, telling me what to do. She's still telling me what to do. And my advice to all the players is listen to your mother.
Get them that's not shall lose. So the Bible says, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to a special two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. Our number here is 454-0400, 1-877-920-WGNU. We broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net from Xenia to Zimbabwe. You can catch the wake-up call, and we are also archived at whiterosesociety.org. Every morning, if you miss an hour, go get an hour. And we are also iPod-ed at whiterosesociety.org. Our guest this morning, for these 2 hours on the special elongated version of Mondays at 9 is Dr. Justin A. Frank. He is the author of the book Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President, the very first act of, or very first time that a sitting president has had the discipline of applied applied psychology applied to a sitting president. Dr. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the childhood of George W. Bush. Talk about the relationship of his mom, the death of his sister, the personality and mothering skills of his mom, his absent father, and then we can talk about his own physical limitations as well. His mom was a piece of work.
His mom was a piece of work, and it's so interesting because she's somebody who's presented to the nation as this kind of kindly, motherly, grandmothery figure, and that's how people viewed her certainly during the first Bush administration of George H.W. Bush. She's not that way at all. She's very tough-minded, quite angry woman who doesn't tolerate any kind of grieving or sadness or indecision. She just wants to get on with things.
Yeah.
And she was always this way. Her own mother was a person who didn't have many mothering skills herself, and she got very little nurturing from her mother, and she acknowledges that and writes about that specifically in her own memoirs about her childhood. And she was always known as a very sarcastic young girl who would put down her friends, and you'd never want to be on the wrong side of her because she was a tough cookie.
Well, her friends even called her a leader bully.
Yes, her friends called her a leader bully, and she writes about that about herself. I mean, she really is not hiding anything, and she was a leader bully, I think, and he is very much cut out of her, in her mold, and more than any other person that he's been influenced by.
Well, and you talk about in your book back to her relationship with her mom, because, Doctor, it matters how your mom's mom was mothered. It matters how your mom was mothered. She didn't even attend the funeral of her own mom.
She didn't attend the funeral of her own mom, and she...
What does that mean from a doctor?
There was no funeral for her daughter. It means that she had what we call, what now in common terms is ambivalence. There was a part of her that it means a couple of things. One is it means she didn't have a lot of warm feelings towards her own mother. But the second thing it could mean also is that she didn't want to ever get in touch with any of her feelings. It's a very much of an anti-feeling approach, whether it's hatred or love, because funerals do stir things up. And I don't see why else she would not have attended, except that she had very mixed feelings about her own mother. She did not feel close to her mother, had very little affection for her, and also I think didn't want to get feelings stirred up. She really denies losses, and this is not, again, as a psychoanalyst, one looks for patterns over time. I mean, this is the same woman who was interviewed on television right before the start of the Iraq War, and she said in 2003 that she was not going to watch any of the news because she doesn't want to look at people coming home in body bags. She doesn't want to dirty her beautiful mind, I think is what she said. And those kinds of statements are typical of her because that's the way she's been her whole life. And so when her daughter fell ill, which is a tragedy beyond tragedies,
and how old was
child,
her daughter? How old was her daughter?
Her daughter was three, mm-hmm. Three and a quarter, I guess, when she got sick with acute leukemia. She was the second born child to the family, George being the first. And he was about 3.5 years older than his sister, whose name was Robin, who was actually named for the mother. interestingly enough. So it's even more complicated and interesting that the daughter named, who was named for the mother, also dies, and she also doesn't have a funeral for that girl. One of the things that happens that I've noticed for years, it's so striking that I'm sure people who are just living your lives will notice that sometimes if you have an unresolved conflict with your parent, it gets replayed with one of your children. It's quite striking how that happens. So, like, if you have a very critical father, let's say, you may end up having fights with your son, who you feel is critical of you, and you sort of put your father into your son. And in her case, she had a very critical mother, and she put her mother into, I think, people around her. She was very self-conscious and very tough-minded, and always the disciplinarian. She was called the one who instills fear. She was she did not believe, she really did believe, actually, spare the rod and spoil the child. And she was very tough and sarcastic. And I think it works both ways.
Well,
he has learned to do that with his mother.
Well, and I guess tough and sarcastic is one thing. Mean is another.
Yes.
I mean, her relationship with her son, the words that would come out of her mouth, they're kind of beyond the word sarcastic, aren't they?
Yes, I think they are beyond sarcastic, and they're very cruel. And I think that she can be extremely mean and cruel verbally. I'm not sure how mean she was physically, and I don't know what was going on in her mind.
Well, you two, you
wrote in clearly your... was worried about her husband wasn't around her first year when she was taking care of George. She was sort of stuck alone in this weird place in Texas with women she didn't have much in common with. And I think she really might have been very angry at him, too. I don't know. All I know is that she did not like being a mother. She talks about that. She writes about that. She didn't like feeling stuck.
And you also write in your book, Doctor, about, and tell us as a doctor what this means, she doesn't seem to have much memory about the raising of her firstborn child.
No, she doesn't have much memory about the raising of her firstborn child. And I did write that one of the things that was so striking is that she has money. She writes, devotes much more attention to Jeb Bush, who was, 6 months old when was the third born and was 6 months old when Robin died. And it made me think that it's almost as if she had two families. She had two sets of children, the one starting with Jeb, and then this other set of two children. And I think the pain of remembering Robin didn't help her remembering much about George. And I think she sort of must have unconsciously, in some ways, I don't know about this for sure at all, but I mean, it just makes me think that she must have associated all of the George and Robin's death and wanted to just forget about that whole thing. And so she didn't really pay a lot of attention to George. He was left to roam about. He was a very hyperactive boy who already had trouble learning and metabolizing information and internalizing things. He had trouble reading. And there was not much opportunity for him to talk with her because she was both withdrawn and angry and also involved with her with Jeb and then the subsequent children. What's striking to me about it is that there's almost like she has two sets of family children, and I really do think that George got ignored and dismissed, partly because he reminded her of Robin, and that if you're not going to face your loss and you're not going to talk about it, you're not going to pay attention to anything that reminds you of it. So in that sense, body bags, Robin, not paying attention to George that reminds her of her loss. I mean, people begin to close off their minds to things they don't want to think about.
And the other piece of this, and we have to take a break, but the other piece of this that I find just astounding is the fact that the baby was 3 years old. The baby wasn't a 2 month old baby. It was a 3.5 year old baby.
Yes.
You don't have a funeral for this baby. Huge. And then secondly, George W. Bush didn't even know that his sister had died.
No.
And they didn't tell her that he was sick.
Well, they knew that he was told to stay away from her and that they didn't want him to upset her. But I don't know what they told him exactly. But it sounds like he was never told that she was sick. And certainly he wasn't told that she died until 2 days afterwards when they came back from the... What they did have was a very brief memorial kind of thing in Connecticut for her, but there was no proper funeral. In fact,
George wasn't there.
The next day, and George was not there.
And
he was in the second grade. And a lot of parents, you know, don't let kids come when they're in the second grade to a funeral. I understand that, but there was never talked about. There was no discussion about it. He would have nightmares when he was away from the house, and there was no discussion of that at all.
And we're going to take a break, folks. I am talking to the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of a President by Dr. Justin A. Frank. This is Liz Brown, Mondays at 9, our special two-hour edition. We'll be back. Stay with us.
My dad has been calling me 43. I call him 41. It's kind of shorthand we have in our family. And we have a nickname for Mother as well. We call her Number One.
Things may not go as you planned. Dark clouds might bring you pain.
The Wake Up Call Blanket Drive is set for Friday, November 18th. Volunteers are needed to man the two collection sites at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, and the lobby of the Congress and Senate Building, the home of WGNU, at 265 Union. Blankets to be accepted that morning starting at 6 o'clock. The actual broadcast from Carver House starts at 7. If you can help us help those in need, call the WGNU business office this morning at 454-6660 or email your contact information to revolution@lizbrown.com. All volunteers receive a free second annual blanket drive t-shirt as a thank you.
The St. Louis Art Museum at One Fine Arts Drive in Forest Park is hosting a bus tour of the St. Louis gallery scene on Saturday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Join us to see the art galleries and discuss the local art scene with artists and curators. Lunch is included with the fee, which is $65, $50 for museum members. To register, call 314-655-5298 or visit www.slam.org. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Johannesburg. The government of Malawi has canceled a $30 million deal to buy fertilizer from a Saudi Arabian company due to its alleged links with Al-Qaeda. That decision could cause problems for farmers because the rainy season in Malawi has now started and farmers will begin planting their crops very shortly. The country has a coupon system for fertilizer distribution which gives farmers access to it at half the commercial price. Malawi is right now suffering through one of the worst food shortages ever due to an extremely dire lack of rain. About 80% of the country's workforce are crop farmers who depend on the fertilizer to grow crops. Government officials say they are working to get fertilizer now from either the Ukraine or Thailand. The deal with the Saudis was brought to the attention of government officials by U.S.-based Citibank, which refused to process the arrangement due to links between the company in question and the terrorist group. And Dateline Cairo. Before the United States launched its invasion of Iraq, President George Bush talked to British Prime Minister Tony Blair about his plans to target other countries, including Saudi Arabia. A report in the British paper The Guardian says the president intended to go further than Iraq in dealing with the question of weapons of mass destruction, and he also mentioned to Blair specifically the countries of Saudi Arabia, Iran, North Korea, and Pakistan. The right-wing hawks in the Bush administration have always been hostile to the Saudis because they think they're not doing enough to keep a lid on Islamic extremists. 2 years ago, the Saudis started on a strategic review that included purveying nuclear weapons. This took the administration by surprise because Washington was under the impression that Saudi Arabia would rely on being protected by the American nuclear umbrella. This is your wake-up call global news update.
All right, the Blues are back.
Yeah, baby.
But we need to make sure you're in game shape before they hit the ice again.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to ask you some quick questions. I want some quick answers. You ready?
You bet. Let's fire away.
First one. He shoots. He
scores.
Light the
lamp. Too easy, man. Try some harder ones.
Baby steps. Baby steps. Right. Try these. Put the blank in the blank.
Biscuit in the basket.
Let's go.
Blues.
Kick save.
And a beauty.
Do you bleed?
Blue. Come on. I thought these were supposed to be harder.
Careful what you wish for, because here comes the lightning round.
Bring it on.
Drop the
puck.
Between the
pipes.
Warm up the
bus.
Teams you hate.
Coyotes, Sharks, Canucks, Oilers.
But the teams you despise.
Red Wings, Avalanche, Blackhawks, and Stars.
And the Flames. Never forget the Flames. Next one. Best moment of your life is?
A tie between the time I won the on-ice tricycle race and the time I suck a chuck at the mall.
You're so ready for the season, my friend.
Get back in blue. Single game tickets on sale now at the box office, Ticketmaster outlets, stlouisblues.com, or call 314-622-BLUE.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I probably won't agree with everything you say, but I'll listen, and I'll respect your opinion. I'll try to understand why the positions you've taken. I'll try to understand why you don't do everything I tell you to do.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to our two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. I am talking to author Dr. Justin Frank, a medical doctor, joining us from Washington, D.C. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. We also have some books to give away. We will give away one copy of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President to the next, to the 10th caller at 454-6660, 454-6660. Dr. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It's wonderful to have this discussion, given the craziness that's going on in our government. Talk to us, because in the next hour, I kind of want to spend time with the adult George W. Bush. But talk to us about your assessment of some amazing physical limitations that exposed themselves during the childhood of George W. Bush.
Well, the main physical limitations were that he was somewhat small, but mainly hyperactive. He was unable to sit still, and it's not clear how much of that was based on anxiety and how much of that's based on neurological wiring, but it was very hard for him to pay attention in class, very hard for him to do certain things. Although he was somewhat of an athlete, he was never as good as his father, who was an outstanding baseball player, in fact was an All-American in college at Yale, and so he was never quite as athletic, although he was more coordinated than lots of other kids. He was a natural leader as a bully type, but very funny, and he converted his difficulties reading, as other kids do who have learning disabilities, into developing a very powerful personality where he could tease, crack jokes, make fun of other people, and inspire people with his kind of quick wit and sense of humor.
And I need to interrupt for 1 second. We do have a winner. We have a winner now for
okay.
The book. But I think that the inspirational part that you, at least that's what you write in your book. The inspirational part is really overshadowed by cruelty, just like his mother in the humor that, or the camaraderie or the connections that he would make with other students. Tell us about the incident with one student. I believe was of Indian descent.
Yes, there was a student actually. I disguised it a little bit, but it was a student of Asian descent.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Who he called an Indian. I mean, it was a kid at Andover when he was in his junior year, who he used to call. There were different. I was told the story by actually the father of this boy.
Mm-hmm. Called him Chief, didn't he?
And he called him Chief for the whole year. Finally, the boy got enough courage to come up to Bush and say to him that...
Now, this is a mostly white school, so we're not talking about...
Right. This was at Andover, which is a very much a mostly white school and a very upper-class school, and the reason this boy was there, in fact, was that his father was either an ambassador or very high up in the diplomatic corps in Washington, and so could send his son there. And what happened was that the son said to the boy said to Bush, you know, George, I really find that insulting and hurtful, and which is pretty courageous when you're 16 or 17 and you're in an all white school and you're a person of color. But also, I think it's difficult just for a teenager to do that in the first place. Mm-hmm. And he did it, and Bush was taken aback and apparently became quiet and said, I'm sorry, or something. And then the next day he walked in and said, good morning, Cochise. In other words, he dropped the chief. He didn't call him chief anymore, but he just switched to another nasty epithet. That's the only incident, by the way, in the book that I wrote that's a personal communication. Everything else is public information and public knowledge, which I think was one of the decisions I had made in writing the book, was to try to keep it without having, you know, things that I knew that other people might not know, because I knew them from my work in Washington, where I am a psychoanalyst, and I hear all kinds of things about people. But I think that his cruelty, one of the things that happens when you're a leader like that, or a gang leader, a group leader, is that people a lot of times laugh at your jokes because they don't want to be under attack by you, because you can be cut to the quick. And he certainly has persisted in this behavior as an adult, the way he deals with the press corps, the way he puts people down, the way he ridicules people in public, even his own wife. But he certainly ridicules everybody, and even calls affectionately calls Karl Rove turd blossom. This is a guy who has always done this, and the cruelty comes out in his behavior when he was in school. In fact, when he was, before he went to Andover, when he was 10 or 11, he used to take firecrackers and insert them into frogs and blow them up.
Jeffrey Dahmer did things like that, didn't he?
Yes, Jeffrey Dahmer did things like that. One of the things that happens is that people who are comfortable being cruel to animals and torturing them need to talk about it and work on it, because they have a real serious problem with their managing their own cruelty and learning how to control it. One of the things that happens for all of us is that everybody has a little bit of pleasure sometimes in the suffering of others, or maybe tempted to be cruel, as Clarence Darrow, the lawyer, since you're an attorney, know this story probably. He said, I've never killed anybody, but I must admit sometimes I enjoy reading the obituaries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we all have some of that in us, and that's what makes us more human than not. The issue is, what do we do with those feelings? And this is a guy who was unchecked. And so what he would do to check his feelings was to convert them into being hyperactive, to convert them into teasing other people and trying to make humorous ways of masking it. And then eventually he became a heavy drinker as a way of managing his anxiety.
And
a lot
of
his anxiety, I think, is about his cruelty, and it was about his fear of both reprisals for his cruelty, but also his fear of his cruelty.
And we have to take a break. We're at the top of the hour. You have about a five-minute break, Dr. Frank. I'm Liz Brown. I'm talking to the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. We'll be back with more of this discussion, more of our extended version of Mondays at 9. Please stay with us.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Respondent Jim Hickey.
General Motors is going along with the company's plan to cut health care coverage for its 750,000 workers. GM CEO Rich Wagoner says the deal is crucial to the company's future.
I think this is a huge move, and we're glad to see it today.
He says the deal will mean cash savings for GM of about $1 billion a year. GM sales, especially in North America, continue to be disappointing. Wagoner says the company posted another big loss in the third quarter, $1.1 billion. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Crude oil futures were nudged higher with another tropical storm possibly eyeing the U.S. Gulf Coast. Wilma is the 21st named storm of the Atlantic season. It ties the record for the most storms in a season, and it's a wet one.
Accumulations of rainfall of 4 to 6 inches over the Cayman Islands and Jamaica, and isolated amounts up to 12 inches are possible, especially in Jamaica where you have a lot of mountainous regions. This could cause dangerous mudslides.
Tricia Wallace with the National Hurricane Hurricane Center. More than a month after Hurricane Katrina hit, it's back to school day in one Mississippi town.
We're overwhelmed, we're anxious, we're nervous, but we are so, so happy to be here. This is just a glorious day in Past Christian.
Principal Kathy Broadway, K through 12, under one roof. One elementary school there. A band leader, his wife, and granddaughter were among five people killed in a weekend bus crash in Wisconsin. They were on their way back from a band competition. Schools open today in Chippewa Falls.
We will operate on a normal bell schedule. Everything will be like it usually is in terms of time. Lunch will be served at the regular time and so on. We know
not a regular day, though. This is ABC News.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
And here they are all the way from Liverpool.
There are thousands marching on Washington as...
A generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477.
Ameriprise Financial Services, member NASD and SIPC.
I seen them thump. I seen them bounce. I seen them modded. Man, I'd even seen them souped up. But I ain't never seen them spin. My name is David Folks, and I discovered the spinning wheel.
Let's all discover something that people can't stop staring at. Monday night start at 8 with American Hot Rod, followed by Monster Garage at 9 and American Chopper at 10. An all-new Monday starts at 8 on the Discovery Channel.
Iraqis are reportedly burying some of the dead after U.S. airstrikes near Ramadi. The U.S. military says about 70 militants were killed, but witnesses say more than half were civilians. British scientists are flying to Southeast Asia on a bird flu fact-finding mission. ABC's Tom Rivers has the story from London.
The experts from the British Medical Research Council agree that migratory birds will eventually bring the virus to places like Britain. That's why they're heading to the epicenter of the outbreak. Team leader Professor Colin Blakemore says time is of the essence.
How we deal with it will depend on how well we are preparing now.
Their findings on how best to tackle any outbreak will form the basis of discussions at a global conference to be held here in December. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
And a universal cheer among Chicago White Sox fans.
Go, go, Sox!
Chicago Sox are going to the World Series for the first time in 46 years to face either Houston or St. Louis. Liz White, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and news, traffic and weather. This hour's news is sponsored by the makers of Maximum Strength Zantac. In the news in your 9 o'clock hour, a murdered North St. Louis boy will be laid to rest this week. A funeral service is scheduled for Craig Collins, Jr. at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning at St. Teresa of Avila Church. The 8-year-old boy was gunned down outside his home along the 8200 block of Church Street last week. No arrests have been made. 200 motorcyclists held a prayer service over the weekend in honor of Craig. A man is hospitalized following an overnight shooting in North St. Louis. Police say the victim was shot around 1:30 this morning at Union and Sacramento. He managed to drive to St. Genevieve Street for help. Police are looking for several male suspects believed to have been in a gold minivan at the time of the shooting. The victim is expected to survive. Fire investigators are looking into the cause of an early morning blaze in North County. The blaze broke out around 12:30 this morning at the residence along Red River Drive in Aspen Woods. No injuries are reported at this hour. A 38-year-old Alton woman is dead after a two-car crash. Paula Manning was in the back seat of a Ford Explorer when it was struck by a tractor-trailer parked on the shoulder of Interstate 70 near Highland early Saturday morning. She was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver and the front seat passenger of the SUV were airlifted to an area hospital. Illinois State Police are still investigating the crash scene. And finally, this hour in your news, area transportation officials hope a new travel safe zones campaign will save lives in St. Louis highways. Festus City Administrator Steve Stoll lives along the newly designated travel safe zone on I-55 between Peavey and Festus, where Festus Mayor Kathy Jorkas died in a car accident in 2001, and where Stoll's daughter, Emily, died in a 1997 crash. Stoll says the bulk of the responsibility for keeping the highway safe lie with the individual drivers.
I hope that when they see these signs and when they read more about this and they put a, we put a human face on the people that have died in these areas, that people will think twice, slow down, and live.
Other travel safe zones are a five-mile stretch of I-70 west of the Poplar Street Bridge, another stretch of I-70 between Lake St. Louis and Wentzville, I-270 between Dorset and St. Charles Rock Road, and 44 between 109 and Pacific. This hour's news has been sponsored by the makers of Maximum Strength Zantac. It's so fast it prevents heartburn before a meal, and so fast it quickly relieves tough heartburn so you don't get impatient. Get Maximum Strength Zantac 150. Now let's get a final check of your traffic for this 9 o'clock hour at AM 920 WGNU. This traffic is sponsored by Good Sense Subs and Pastas. Northbound 55 between Weber and 44, no problems reported. Eastbound 70 between between Bryan Road and Blanchett Bridge, everything's running smoothly. Northbound 270 at 44, that traffic is finally easing up this hour. Westbound 270 between Lilac and 170, look for normal traffic. In both directions, 40 between Hanley, everything is on the move. The I-70 reversible lanes are closed until midday due to maintenance. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Cleves Landing, everything is on the move. Westbound 5570 to Poplar Street Bridge, look for road construction. The left lane is closed on the Missouri end, and traffic is slow across the bridge. And eastbound 364 Creekcore Lake Bridge, three right lanes are closed until Tuesday for bridge work. Expect a brief slowdown. The Maryland Heights Expressway ramp to 364, eastbound 364 is also closed as well. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Mr. Good Sense Subs and Pastas. Mr. Good Sense is now serving hot ones. Try a hot roast beef and cheddar, a hot pastrami and Swiss, or a hot Philly Jack cheesesteak sub. Mr. Good Sense Subs and Pastas, home of the hot ones, serving hot ones at all 14 locations. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly sunny skies today, high around 80. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Tuesday, partly cloudy skies with a high around 80. Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 64 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 65. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's Mondays at 9, hour number 2, right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll take another look at your news and weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
More and more of our imports come from overseas.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to our two-hour edition of Mondays at 9. I am joined this morning by Justin A. Frank, doctor, a medical doctor, and author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank, welcome back. Good morning, Dr. Frank.
Thank you.
Okay, it's good to have you back.
Okay.
One of the things, the clip that I just played a few seconds ago, more and more of our imports are coming from overseas. It's kind of like a don't be fooled. It's like a Who's Buried Grant's Tomb type of a comment. The fact of the matter is that that's a ridiculous when you listen to it. But in order to analyze that, we need to go back a little bit. Let's talk about, because I want to finish up the childhood of George W. Bush with some of the mental, what you've written about in your book are really significant mental challenges that he had in and his growth and his development.
Yes, he has serious mental challenges. He has, I am absolutely sure, and every time I've given talks about this at where members of the audience have either a child or their own experience of somebody with ADHD, they say that my diagnosis and having read the book is exactly their experience with their own family or with themselves. Namely, he has adult attention deficit hyperactive disorder, which means that he is both hyperactive, and you can see this even when he was governor, and sometimes now, if you look at him when he's not on camera, he's always touching people, jerking around, tapping people on their heads, twitching, not able to sit still. And that's the hyperactive part, and that affects their ability to pay attention. What happens with these children when they're children is that they get so agitated that it's like torture to have to sit down and read a book. They cannot do it. It's like asking somebody to put in a windowless room and try to solve a Rubik's Cube problem. I mean, after a while, you would go stir crazy. But they're like that when they just read an ordinary book. It's very, very difficult for them to sit still. The second thing is that he has a learning disability that involves difficulty reading in addition to just being hyperactive, and that is that he has trouble making sense of words. So what happens is that when people have that problem, they get impatient. And when they're impatient, they jump to conclusions. So like people will read the first few syllables of a long word and then finish it in their own mind the way they think it should sound, even though it may have nothing to do with the actual meaning of the word. So what happens is that you lose meaning right away. And what happens to that person is that they begin to develop an inability or difficulty thinking and organizing their thoughts. And he was very much like that. What children like that need is they need structure to manage their thinking. They need to really learn to go slow, have parents set limits, have school teachers set limits and organize them in a way that they can learn to manage their hyperactivity. Because otherwise what happens is they become extremely defensive and they're unable to manage their own anxiety. They don't learn techniques to control their anxiety. And what happens is that they're not, the word I would use or do use is that they're not contained. If they don't have structure around them, they're not able to contain their anxieties. Children who are babies and nursing and growing up with a calm mother, for instance, the mother can help them contain their anxiety so they learn to contain their own. But since Bush had a distracted or depressed or unavailable mother, she didn't help him learn to contain his anxiety. And then when you have learning disabilities later on, when you're, a latency age of like a kid, 5, 6, 7, 10, 12, it's really difficult to manage your own anxiety and sit still. And we see derivatives of this in his adult life. As president, what he has done very often is make the people anxious. And he passes on his anxiety because he's almost like an anxiety sieve. He's unable to manage his emotions without either retreating to Crawford, doing a massive exercise program, or turning to drink. So the other way of managing it is to pass the anxiety through him onto us. And so we're more anxious sometimes about the terrorists than he is, because what happens is that when you're a child and you don't manage anxiety, you don't learn how to contain it, you don't have structure, so it interferes with your ability to think and inability to function. Well, so, for instance, one last thing. When he says he's a gut player, for instance, as an adult, I'm talking a lot here, when he says he's a gut player as an adult, like he doesn't, it's not only that he's a gut player because he goes by his emotional reaction, say to Putin or somebody. He's a gut player because he doesn't have any options. He's not able to think clearly about material that comes to him cognitively.
And also, if I can just add just one quick thing, also, okay, you're a gut player out of default as well, because if you are dyslexic, you're not going to read, and he's expressed that.
Yes, if you're dyslexic and you don't read, and he says he doesn't read,
he says the President of the United States says, I don't read the newspaper.
Correct.
That's insane, doctor.
The reason he doesn't is because he can't. It's hard work, like he says about being president. And it's a very serious problem for someone who is president. I mean, there are lots of people who have trouble reading who become very much contributors to society. They channel things. I mean, I used to think a lot of people in my profession, physicians, have certain kinds of dyslexia because we learn to memorize facts and we read journals, but we can't read anything that requires long attention span. That's not true of all doctors, by the way, but many people who work in different fields learn to memorize things. They memorize their lines if they're becoming an actor and they have this problem. They learn how to do things to compensate. But in his case, we need a president who can read. We need a president who will be able to think. This is a man who is not able to think. And that was the main reason I ended up having to write this book.
That segues rather nicely into our next part of the book that you have written. But before we get to that, I want to give away another one of the books, Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. The number to call is 454-6660. We'll take the 10th caller, Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President, and Howard will be taking those calls. Dr. Frank, the other thing, the segue in, because I love what you're saying, explaining about the anxiety piece of it, not knowing how to manage your anxiety, not being taught by a mother was incapable of teaching it, a father that was never there. I mean, basically, he was raised in a single parent home, not being able to manage, learning how to manage anxiety is made even I guess I can't even think of the number how much problem this is for a person who is an alcoholic.
Yes.
Talk to us about his alcoholism.
Well, one of the things that happens is that the purpose of drinking for many people like Bush is that they drink in order to manage their anxiety. In other words, they drink in terms of a way of trying to calm themselves
down.
We
have a winner.
Hello?
We have a winner.
Okay. And they drink in order to calm themselves down, in order to manage their anxiety, but of course it has a paradoxical effect. But the reason people drink like him is to try to control feelings. But the thing is that it doesn't help because you then become dependent on alcohol, and every time you're having a rough idea or a rough thought or something is bothering you, the urge is to take a drink to calm down. And so that's why so many people, hardworking people, like to have a drink to relax at the end of a work day. It's not uncommon. But for him, there was a desperate need for that because he was unable to manage any anxiety. So he would drink heavily and then sort of narcotize himself, knock himself out. So the old saying that alcoholics often have is they say, I'm feeling no pain. And that was essentially his goal, was to numb himself so he would feel no pain and no anxiety and no but what happens is that if you depend totally on alcohol, you really are at sea when the alcohol is not there anymore.
And let's talk about that for a second, because here we have a person that turned to alcohol to manage their anxiety, stopped drinking alcohol, and now the anxiety is still an issue because now you have to avoid anxiety in order to keep away from going back to drinking.
You've got it exactly right. In fact, what happened to him and what I think is still going on is that self-maintenance has taken precedence for him and self-preservation over maintaining the nation and paying attention to the problems in the nation, that his it becomes more and more of a desperate situation. So when he said on August 11th to the press about Cindy Sheehan, who was the woman camped out at Camp Casey outside of Crawford, who lost her son in Iraq and who just wanted him to explain what the noble cause is, he said, I have to get on with my life.
Mm, I know, I remember that.
And it was a very disturbing statement to most people, but to me, it was, I mean, it's disturbing, but it's basically true. He is not able to talk about things because he cannot think. He has to constantly take care of himself, and he meant it when he has to get on with his life. He has to exercise. He has to go away on vacations. He has to have short meetings with people because he is not able to think or to manage his anxiety except on very short exposures. And so this is why he's at tremendous risk to go back to the bottle, because one of the things that people do is that when they're anxious, they, and if they're alcoholics and they're not in any kind of an AA program, they are going to go for the bottle and they are going to reach for it, and they're very frightened of that. So he has not just the anxiety about being president, the anxiety about his aggression, the anxiety about not being able to think. He also has the added anxiety of a fear that he's going to start to drink again.
And
he turns that into exercise, religion, short meetings, all the things I was saying. Plus, black and white thinking is a way of managing, an attempt to manage anxiety, that all bad exists outside. Inside, I'm only good.
Well, and let's talk about the choice that he has made of how he's going to deal with his alcoholism, because he's, as you said a few seconds ago, he's not in AA, and that's significant, isn't it?
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
One of the things that people who are alcoholics who are, and I won't treat alcoholics unless they're in AA with psychotherapy, because I really feel that they have to be in a situation where they have a place to go at the moment they're anxious. They have to have a sponsor. And since I work by, you know, appointments, it's much, I know I'm available to people to call me, but I'm not really able to kind of sit and talk with them spontaneously in the middle of the night or the middle of the day. And the sponsor will be able to do that. And the people in AA really need somebody to help them on a regular basis to manage their anxiety so they don't turn to drink, so they do have other people to depend on. And that's an important part of the 12-step program. And his was much more of a kind of a 12-step bicycle program where he would exercise massively to manage his anxiety, because he would rather exercise or think about exercising, even, because he talks about exercising, because he didn't ever learn effective ways of managing anxieties. He's able to depend on a few other people who are very much like Laura, I felt, was functioning as an anxiety manager for him this past week when he had his television interview with Matt Lauer, and he was so anxious that one of the Washington Post writers, Dana Milbank, counted the number of times he blinked.
Yes.
To 37 when he was asked a particular question that made him uncomfortable. Laura really is one of the people, excuse me, who helps him manage his anxiety. You can turn to other people, and so he does do that to some extent with her, with Karen Hughes, with Condi Rice, and now it turns out with Harriet Myers, who he's trying to get on the Supreme Court. He turns to people who are usually women who are not mean, who are not like his mother, who are going to be really accepting and take care of him and help him manage his anxiety. So instinctively, he knows to do that, but he won't be in any kind of a program, because that means he has to acknowledge that he's an alcoholic. That means he has to face facts and take responsibility.
And one of the things, that, and I wanted to make two quick points, if I may, here.
Sure.
Alcoholic, AA, refers to people that don't go through any kind of treatment program to get off of the bottle. They refer to them as dry drunks.
Yes.
And then you just made a comment a second ago about the indications of a person that is not successfully managing their addiction to alcoholism is the refusal to take responsibility, and AA is big on that.
Yes.
And you used the example earlier in the last hour about Jay Leno.
Yes.
And that's a perfect example of him not taking responsibility for his drinking, and he's admitted that he had an alcohol problem, but he's still not taking responsibility for it.
Exactly. And one of the problems that if you don't take responsibility, you are not capable of psychic growth and psychic development. You do, if they all go together, the inability to take responsibility makes it very difficult for you to contain anxiety because you don't even know that your anxiety may be of your own making. So you don't have ways of thinking about what's making you anxious. Anxiety for most of us, even though we don't like it, is a source of information. It's a signal that something's going on that we need to pay attention to. I'm nervous before this performance. I'm nervous about this. I'm nervous about that. That means something. So we have to think about what it is about this thing that's making us nervous. Whereas for him, he has to get rid of it immediately. Anxiety is the enemy. Anxiety is his own private terrorist. Mm. And that he is constantly doing everything possible to avoid anxiety. And including clinging to the same belief system, refusing to change his mind, as he said to Tim Russert, and as he said to other people, no matter what evidence there is, and also not taking responsibility, which means blaming other people, blaming the CIA and George Tenet, blaming anybody else for anything that goes wrong, blaming the mayor of New Orleans for the failure based on his appointment of a friend and supporter rather than somebody who was competent to run FEMA.
Pretending to take responsibility and then taking that back.
Yes. He really cannot do it. And when he was asked in April of 2004, I guess it was, by the press, if he had, at a press conference, if he had made any mistakes during his first term, he couldn't think of any. Because what happens is you become unable to think. And this is a long pattern where when you're confronted the way he was confronted, my thought is he experienced a friendly question by Jay Leno as a confrontation that made him get anxious. So this
and then
is
tell
why
on
he
his
freezes
brother.
When somebody asks him a question.
And then tell on his brother.
And then telling on his brother. And so, but you can see, and there's a crisis for this president, he will freeze because he doesn't know how to think or function. And anxiety is useful because it helps you learn to manage. If you can manage your own inner feelings and take some responsibility, then when something big hits, and things big hit all the time if you're president, you have a better shot at managing things.
And one of the things that I want to talk about, too, is the fact that we have this individual that has this alcoholic personality that's been described or referred to as a dry drunk by the AAs. Talk to us about the significance of the dry drunk component.
Well, the dry drunk is not a medical term, so it's not a term that I use in my practice or diagnostically. However, it's a very interesting term and really useful, and AA has coined it because what they found, and I agree with their findings. In fact, I'd like to have it be a term that could be found into the medical nomenclature. But basically, a dry drunk is somebody who has all of the characteristics of an alcoholic without the alcohol. So they behave as if they were drunk. They behave with bad judgment. They behave irrationally. They have a short temper. They see the world in black and white. They become kind of suddenly impulsive, and they are not able to think clearly. They have a faulty judgment about things. They're not able to stop and think very much the way any alcoholic would be, except they're not drinking. And they have the exact same character traits. They have, again, faulty judgment, an inability to think clearly, a need to see the world in black and white, impulsivity and impatience. These are all qualities that he has shown. And they are also very suspicious, the way alcoholics might become suspicious that you're out to get them or do something to them. They become more and more suspicious of other people. And so I think what happens is, in fact, one of the things I mentioned in the book was that he used to ask at press conferences in the first term, is that a trick question? He must have asked that a lot. I think somebody at Harper Magazine wrote an article about it, saying that he would ask if they were trying to trick him. In other words, a dry drunk is also very suspicious about being tricked. So I think that all of these added together makes him have to avoid anxiety, and that he goes out of his way to avoid anxiety. And that's why things are simple. He says he likes snappy headlines because that makes there little room for doubt. And what happens is that if you learn to feel doubt, you then have to get anxious, and then you face responsibility. Those are all anathema to him, so that's why he has to be certain. That's why it's very simple to invade Iraq. It's very simple to do things. And he even says that he doesn't do nuance, but he doesn't say that the reason he doesn't is not because he thinks it's silly or stupid. It's because he can't, because nuance makes him anxious.
And then we have to take another break here, Doctor.
Okay.
But I was struck as you were talking about all of the things, all of the issues that he confronts as an alcoholic, but and all of the behaviors that he exhibits as a dry drunk, if you will, mm-hmm. are the same qualities he seems like he's pulled out of religion. It seems like he's pulled out of religion the same things that he's exhibiting
right.
as a dry drunk. And let's talk about his religion, his relationship with religion, his relationship with God when we come back, because it sure seems like he uses God in the same type of a way. And we're going to take a break. My name is Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. I'm talking to Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. You don't want to miss any of this, folks. Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back.
And I ask you to join me in setting a tone of civility and respect in Washington.
Has Steve Franklin been on your mind? Join him online at WGNU.net.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes, and after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I have the knowledge and most importantly the discipline to make conscious healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today.
Congratulations! You found Radio Free St. Louis online at WGNU.net. Remember, we're also at 920 on your AM dial in the St. Louis metropolitan area.
Ugh, gas is so expensive anymore. I don't want to drive all over town to shop.
I know what you mean.
But you want to get a gift for Jeff and Connie's anniversary? Something really special, you said, and I want to get an estimate on new siding.
Well, Jeff and Connie are going to Regional Exposure 2005.
When's that?
Saturday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 23rd from noon to 6 p.m. It's at the St. Clair Square. I'll find Jeff and Connie's gift while you visit exhibits representing hundreds of manufacturers, distributors, and services. Everything you need in one stop. Plus, great entertainment, and you can register to win great prizes all weekend.
Hey, let's carpool with Jeff and Connie. That way we'll really save gas.
Regional Exposure 2005, Saturday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 23rd from noon to 6 p.m. at St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Hosted by St. Clair Square, sponsored by Anchor Siding and Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Give more details at www.spcshows.com. This is a specialized promotional concepts production.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I can't think of anything more logical and more commonsensical.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Dr. Justin Frank. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. This is Liz Brown. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. I see you on the line. I'll get to you shortly. Our email is revolution@lizbrown.com. We are broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net, archived daily at whiterosesociety.org, iPodded did at whiterosesociety.org as well. Doctor, I want to talk about Bush's relationship with God. He uses God kind of like Old Testament God, doesn't he?
Yes, he uses God like Old Testament God. He uses God to justify his behavior. It's not using God as something that humbles him or that allows him to think with compassion about other people. It's very much not a Christian God, but it's much more of an Old Testament God of vengeance and revenge. And so there is precedent for his behavior in terms of actual religious beliefs, but that he really does not. He uses God as another way to shore up his anxiety in several ways. One is that he's always right. Secondly, he can justify, it fits with the first one, he can justify his behavior because he's doing it as God's will. The third thing is he is above criticism for the same reason, because he's on the side of God and on the side of what's good and fighting against evil. So he uses religion as a way then to also manage anxiety, the anxiety that might stem from uncertainty, the anxiety that might stem from a kind of normal sense of saying, wait a minute, I'm not sure that this is the right decision. You still have to make decisions as president. But as he said, he never lost a moment's sleep right after he decided to bomb Iraq. And he would go to sleep, and he sleeps the untroubled sleep of a person who's really anxiety-free.
Just like his
what
mom.
People don't, yes. What is so important, I think, that people don't understand, especially, and I have trouble with this myself, and remembering it, and that is that these defenses work for him.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be escalated. They have to be increased whenever there's pressure. But basically, he uses them because they work. He does sleep. He does exercise. He does. He is able to be fresh a lot of the time. And I think the only time when they don't work is when people can confront him directly. That's why he didn't know what to do about Cindy Sheehan, because people want to confront him directly. When they do that, he then is in trouble. But otherwise, he hides behind his anxieties. He chooses people who work in his cabinet who totally agree with him. He chooses people who will never challenge him. He does not want to be challenged because he doesn't know how to deal with it.
And let's move quickly into the other piece of the book that I thought that was so fascinating is, you call the chapter The Smirk, but I think it should be replaced with The Sadist. I
yes.
mean, there's some sadistical stuff in the mind and in the actions of George W. Bush.
I think that's been the most difficult chapter and the most difficult thing to write about and talk about to the general audience, because I think it's extremely difficult to think of one's own president as being sadistic, and not only being sadistic, being comfortable with his sadism and cruelty, and that it's a very hard term to use, especially when our president is supposed to help us find our better selves and is supposed to help us manage our anxieties, but also get on with our lives and make America a safe place where we can actually pursue life, liberty, and happiness. But a sadist is really someone who cannot manage their cruelty and has to inflict it either directly or indirectly. He has a long history of being sadistic, of sadistic behavior, from the blowing up of frogs to that
with firecrackers.
With the firecrackers, the example we talked about earlier about how he teased that classmate at Andover, and then when he was in college, he used to heat up, when he was the pledge master at his fraternity, he would take coat hangers, heat them up, and brand the buttocks of freshmen at Yale.
And in between the buttocks.
And it was really very, very, very cruel. when the reason this came to light, actually, is because some of the kids complained, and because his name was a famous name, he was interviewed by the New York Times about it in 1967. That's a long time ago, when
wow.
he was a senior in college. And he, at that time, told the interviewer that it's nothing worse than a cigarette burn. It doesn't seem what the big deal is. So, A, he minimizes the destructiveness, but B, we stop and don't think. We don't think, well, wait a minute, who goes around burning people with cigarettes?
And yet, and using that as a comparison, and you write in your book, cigarette burns do leave scars.
Yes, they do. And that actually, I had the sense suddenly that the torture scenes in Abu Ghraib and in Guantanamo are direct reflections of his long history of not just being sadistic, but being comfortable with it. So he's comfortable when other people do it. And it may not be that he's saying, go and torture these people, but he is so comfortable with them torturing people that he never has to put a stop to it.
He doesn't feel it.
He doesn't feel it.
Doesn't
and he's comfortable with a dead body floating down the street in Katrina that is just was finally got through to some of the newscasters who were so horrified by it. He's very comfortable with that. And what I wrote about in my book was I called it malign indifference, and that was playing on something that a New York senator talked about, benign indifference, which means not paying attention in the way a royalty might not pay attention. But his indifference is much more malignant and much more malicious and much more vicious and is a reflection of his sadism. And in fact, Dennis Kucinich made one of the great statements that that indifference is a weapon of mass destruction. And I thought that was an amazing statement he made right after Katrina.
And let's take, I know there's so many people waiting to get on the line and ask you a question, Doctor, so let's get to a couple of those.
Sure.
Hassan, you have a question
Good morning, sister. Good morning, and thank you. Liz, you have a history of having outstanding intellect as guests on your show, and you have not compromised that history in any way whatsoever this morning. Dr. Frank, how are you?
I'm fine. Good morning.
Believe it or not, as we speak, I'm looking at you on television.
Oh, you are?
Yes, I am. Look, last year, October 23rd, I caught you on a segment of In Your Face, and I couldn't believe it on Free Speech TV, FSTV, and I couldn't believe it. Thank goodness for DVR. I backed it up. I recorded. I took out pen and paper, and I have all of the notes so far, Yale, everything, the frogs, everything you discussed. I took notes so I could study it. I am so glad Liz has you on this show. In the beginning of the first hour, you mentioned, as far as applied psychology, certain signs are given by the people's eyes, and that hasn't been touched on again.
Right.
I want you to talk about that and also this guy's body language.
All right.
One more thing, Liz.
Sure.
As far as direct confrontation that you just mentioned, I've seen examples of that all through his administration. Every time he has a press conference and there's a question asked that is not scripted, and when he doesn't have the answer, he begins to shuffle, he lowers his head, his eyes avoids making contact with anyone. This guy is sick. I'm so glad you wrote this book. Liz, I've been on since 8 o'clock. I didn't have a chance to call it in for the book. If you have any left, you know I'd held since 8 o'clock.
All right.
If you have a chance, let me get a book, Liz.
All right, Hizat. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We had a doctor on a medical person on last week to talk about iridology, the looking into the eyes. The eyes are the windows to the soul. It's true with George W. Bush, right?
Yes, they are. I think that what is important about his eyes is that they, for me, I find him to look actually alternating between being frightened, like a deer caught in the headlights, and being mean and cruel, hard and not allowing any light in. They're like, he won't allow anything in. They're eyes of someone who is not going to take in anything, but is always going to be looking out and on the lookout in a very paranoid way.
Mm.
I think the second thing is about his body language, which is that in his body language, one of the hallmarks of all bullies, and I mean all bullies, is that they are cowards at heart.
That's right.
And that if you confront a playground bully, you will find that. And I think that the press has been afraid to confront him and has gone along with him because you don't want to have a president who collapses in front of you.
Hmm.
I think that at some level they are aware.
They're enablers?
Not be conscious. They're enablers. They're aware of his anxiety. And I think that one of the things that happens is, on the one hand, they're afraid and they could lose their jobs and he threatens them and does all that. But I think at another level, I think that they are enablers the way the children of an alcoholic father are enablers. They tiptoe around and they walk on eggshells. And that, as I wrote in my book, their motto is a different version of don't ask, don't tell. Their motto is don't ask, don't ask.
There you go.
They don't want to ask questions that will upset him.
And, let me
and they see that in his body language. I think that he's afraid of confrontation, and they know it. If the press could ever get together and confront him directly about Iraq, about any of the things that are going on, and say, if one member of the press had enough courage to say, Mr. President, I'm not going to go along with your set up rules of no follow-up questions. I'm going to ask a follow-up question. And then if the next, then he switches to another person, if the other person who's the next questioner is asked, he would say, I want to go back to that other person's question and follow up on it.
So
in other words, the press has to get together. It's almost like they have to unionize.
Well, we have to have a press intervention.
Yes.
Let me get to another caller here. Irwin, you have a question for our guest, Dr. Frank.
Hello, are you speaking to me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, yes, my question for Dr. Frank has to do with, appreciate all of the observations he's made, but many of those things are obvious to those of us who watch Mr. Bush. What I wondered about was about the psychology of the people who support him despite all of these evidence.
And there's a chapter in the book about that, and we're going to get to that, Irwin.
Okay.
There's a chapter in the book on that because I think a lot of Americans need to be on the couch as well. So we're going to talk about that, Irwin. Good question.
Thank you
so much. We have to take a break, though. Dr. Frank, we need to talk about that when we come back about what America must be doing in the minds of those that support him. But I also want to talk about, when we come back, I also want to talk about a mistake it would be to think that George W. Bush is somehow stupid.
Right.
Because from reading your book, he's not a stupid man.
He is not a stupid man.
He is absolutely not a stupid man. Thank you. We're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. I am talking to author Dr. Justin Frank. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. He has written the book Bush on the Couch. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back.
The resolve of our great nation is being tested. But make no mistake, we will show the world that we will pass this test.
I don't care what others say. They think we don't listen anymore.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Baghdad. A UN official says the American armed forces are using hunger and deprivation of water as a weapon against the civilian population. John Ziegler, sociology professor and overseer of the Right to Food program, says that Iraqi and U.S. forces cut off or restricted food and water to force residents of Fallujah, Tal Afar, and Samarra to leave those cities before heavy attacks started designed to root out resistance fighters. Fallujah was the site of one of the bloodiest American raids last November, with over 700 people reported killed and thousands wounded. Ziegler said using food and water as weapons is a flagrant violation of international law. He's scheduled to give his report to the UN General Assembly next Thursday and will be asking for other countries to condemn this strategy in the form of a resolution. A U.S. military spokesperson says Ziegler's claims are inaccurate and that American forces take all precautions they can to make sure the people of Iraq are well cared for. Last month, Ziegler filed a report with the Human Rights Commission that concluded twice as many children are now suffering from malnutrition as there were before the U.S. invaded Iraq in March of 2003. And Dateline Baghdad, the British government has offered an official apology to Iraq over last month's incident in Basra, in which two British operatives dressed as Arabs were broken out of a jail by British forces. They were being held on charges of trying to carry out sabotage acts and create sedition among the residents. Britain has also agreed to pay for injuries and damage caused by the storming of the police station. A statement issued by the British Consulate General expressed regret for the episode, which happened on September 19th. The local governor had described the British action as barbaric, and said unless a formal apology was made, he would end all cooperation with coalition forces. There was never any investigation conducted into what the British operatives were doing. This and other incidents have suggested that many of the bomb attacks taking place could in fact be covert intelligence operations designed to create splits in the Iraqi society, as well as attempts to weaken the resistance movement. And in a report just from last Wednesday, two Americans disguised in Arab dress were apprehended by a large number of Iraqis as they tried to blow up a booby-trapped car in the middle of a residential neighborhood in western Baghdad. This is your wake-up call Global News Update. You're looking to get into real estate. Where do you go? What do you do? Call Lisa at 314-629-7830. Properties available from $50,000 to $200,000. Available with no money down. Take your choice of area, St. Louis City, St. Louis County, or St. Charles County. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Get into the game. Make the first move. Call Lisa Krempaski, 629-7830. That's Lisa Krempaski, 314-629-7830.
All right, the Blues are back.
Yeah, baby.
But we need to make sure you're in game shape before they hit the ice again.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to ask you some quick questions. I want some quick answers. You ready?
You bet. Let's fire away.
First one. He shoots. He
scores.
Light the
lamp. Too easy, man. Try some harder ones.
Right, baby steps. Baby steps.
Right.
Try these. Put the blank in the blank.
Biscuit in the basket.
Let's go.
Blues.
Kick save.
And a beauty.
Do you bleed?
Blue. Come on. I thought these were supposed to be harder.
Careful what you wish for, because here comes the lightning round.
Bring it on.
Drop the
puck.
Between the
pipes.
Warm up the
bus.
Teams you hate.
Coyotes, Sharks, Canucks, Oilers.
But the teams you despise.
Red Wings, Avalanche, Blackhawks, and Stars.
And the Flames. Never forget the Flames. Next one. Best moment of your life is?
A tie between the time I won the on-ice tricycle race and the time I suck a chuck at the mall.
You're so ready for the season, my friend.
Get back in blue. Great group discounts and hospitality packages available. Call 314-622-BLUE to book your reservation now.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Ryan.
When I was coming up, it was a dangerous world, and we knew exactly who the they were. It was us versus them, and it was clear who the them was. Today, we're not so sure who the they are, but we know they're there.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. And after hearing that, I'm torn, Dr. Frank. I want to go with the mindset of America, the Americans that need to be on the couch. But I want to start with, I feel we have to start with, it would be a mistake to think that this man is stupid.
Yes, he's not stupid at all.
And give us the Karen Hughes example, please, that you talk about in your book, her first meeting with George W. Bush, about the comment that he made about the picture of her child on the desk.
Well, just about how astute he was at reading people when he met Karen Hughes, he right away sided with her sympathies about her child. And he was able to immediately, he's like the finest kind of salesman who instinctively knows where to get each customer to like them and to believe in them. And that's a particular kind of intelligence that is almost laser-like in its accuracy. And he's able to do that with large audiences, albeit now it's hard to tell because so many of them are pre-selected audiences. But early on in his campaigns, he's able to really charm people and seduce people, and he's extremely intelligent. A person who's got a learning disability and who has the ADD that we've talked about before, but who's innately intelligent, and I think he has good brain genes from both sides of the family, has to convert that intelligence into some other form so he can use it effectively. And his form of doing that has been by being astute astute reader of the political landscape.
And mean and smart enough to know how cruelty and threats and violence works into this whole control thing as well.
And also, yes, and also he can seduce the audience the way he did with that quote you played about the terrorists. We know they're there. One of the things that is striking about that is that he gets the audience to laugh in the face of its fear. And then he also taps into the fact that many people, every single human being, once when we were two, had night terrors. Everybody. It's part of life. So everybody has had the experience of inchoate fear, has had the experience of knowing what it's like to be scared and not know why. He is able to tap into that part of us in a way that is the very few political leaders have been able to do. And he knows how to do that instinctively. I don't think he thinks it through. It's a particular kind of emotional intelligence that he has that's really striking. It's so natural to him. It's like seeing a broken field runner in football who can really run down the field.
You quote in your book Shakespeare and King Lear, I think that George Bush is more Richard III.
Well, I think you're right. I think that Richard III essentially was enraged that he was born, as he said, half scared, half made up,
and
he was defective at birth, and that he resolved to be able to be cruel and do whatever he wanted because he felt that he was above the law. And I did write a little bit about that in the book also, that he was an exception, that he felt that he was outside the law, that the law didn't apply to him, and that he could do whatever he wanted because of the cruelty that was done to him, even though this was a boy who was born to a wealthy family with all kinds of privilege. He was born where he said that, you know, for him he grew up with the four B's, beer, bourbon, and B&B. And he does that humorously and also seriously. This
and
is the person who's...
We have 3 minutes, Doctor.
Who's angry. I wanted to answer the man's question or respond to it a little bit. First of all, simple theories are very appealing, and that's one of the things that makes him popular. We all want to know if Barry Bonds was a better home run hitter than Mark McGwire, especially people from St. Louis. And I think that that's a natural thing. We're always comparing people. We always want to think in terms of good and bad, who's better. And Bush taps into that part of us that's there in so many people. The second thing is that we elect people to represent us, to do things so we don't have to. And one of the things that is so important is that it's very hard to mobilize people to oppose a leader because it takes a lot of work. You have to give up other things to do it. Another thing has to do with his alcoholism. A lot of people have had drinking problems in this country, and so they're sympathetic to somebody who has now admitted that he's been drinking and had been drinking, and they want to make sure that he doesn't get anxious. Another thing is that people who are children of abusive parents, you know, who've been beaten up as children, they don't want to believe that their father hates them. They really can't they deny their own being abused. And it's a natural tendency that when we depend on somebody, we don't want to think that they're out to get us. And so I think that that's another source of his strength and his popularity. That would be true for just about any president. Another part that he taps into is wishing makes it so, that if you wish it to be true, it is true. I wish there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, therefore there are. And then fear is another factor. And if he talks about not just the terrorists that are out there in terms of the night terrors I was talking about, we are also, some people are afraid of him because they're afraid that he has the power now to say that anyone who disagrees with him, he can call a terrorist.
Can we look at how the press responds to him, the press corps, as kind of a microcosm of how America responds to him?
I think very much. And in the new epilogue in my paperback book, there's a little bit more about that, that the press really enables him in all the ways I just listed. Plus, I think they are allow him to stay in his retreat. He is in a kind of a psychic retreat, like Crawford and these various places. And we allow him to do that, and the enabling qualities of the press is that they don't really report the news. For instance, this week, there was hardly anybody talks about this new investigation with Karl Rove about Valerie Plame. What they're not talking about is that it really was a threat to national security to out her. Nobody talks about how dangerous that is.
And that has to be the last word. I am so sorry, Dr. Frank. We had 2 hours and there's still not enough. Still not enough. Thank you so much. Author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President, Justin A. Frank. Thank you. And I think I would love to have you back. Would you come back?
I would definitely come back. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Take care. This is Liz Brown. Mondays at 9. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Liz White.
There's a bigger drama playing out on health care, which is the fact that health care costs in this country are out of control.
Rick Wagner, CEO of General Motors, announcing third quarter losses over $1 billion and a tentative deal with workers aimed at saving health care costs. ABC's Dean Reynolds has more from Detroit.
Well, Wagner danced very close to the line of suggesting that